Wakefield is reporting 17. It's time now for the award-winning wake-up call with your host, Liz Brown. She's up next. We'll take another look at your traffic and weather in the bottom of the 6 o'clock hour. I'm Howard Morton for AM 920 WGNU.
Time now for another edition of the Wake-Up Call with Liz Brown. Views expressed on this program are not necessarily those of the staff, management, or advertisers of WGNU Radio. This broadcast is a production of Norman Broadcasting Company, Incorporated, and WGNU Radio, and is intended solely for the information and entertainment of our listening audience. Any rebroadcast, transcribing, recording, or other use of this material without the expressed written consent of Norman Broadcasting Company, Incorporated, and WGNU Radio is strictly prohibited. We ask that you govern your calls within the bounds of brevity and good taste. And now, the wake-up call with Liz Brown.
Santa baby, just slip a sable under the tree for me. Been an awful good girl, Santa baby, so hurry down the chimney tonight. Santa baby, a 54 convertible to light blue. I'll wait up for you, dear Santa baby, so hurry down the chimney tonight. Think of all the fun I've missed. Think of all the fellas that I haven't kissed. Next year I could be just as good if you check off my Christmas list. Santa baby, I want a yacht, and really that's not a lot. Been an angel all year, Santa baby, so hurry down the chimney tonight. Santa honey, one little thing I really need, the deed to a platinum mine, Santa baby, so hurry down the chimney tonight. Santa cutie, and fill my stocking with a duplex and checks. Sign your X on the line, Santa cutie, and hurry down the chimney tonight. Come and trim my Christmas tree with some decorations bought at Tiffany. I really do believe in you. Let's see if you believe in me. Santa baby, forgot to mention one little thing, a ring. I don't mean on the phone, Santa baby, so hurry down the chimney tonight. Hurry down the chimney tonight. Hurry. Tonight.
Welcome, welcome. Good morning. Welcome to the morning wake-up call. This is Liz Brown, living my life as an African and loving it. 454-0400 is my phone number. 454-6609 is my fax. You need to get up. You need to get to me. We have so much stuff to talk about. 454-0400 is the phone number. 454-6609. That would be the fax. Good Lord. You need to get up. You need to get to me. We have so much stuff to talk about. I don't know. I think that, I was talking to a friend of mine about family last night. And the challenge is, I mean, you don't pick your family, do you? And the challenge is that some of our relatives place in our lives. Sometimes they're, you know, sometimes we're blessed with, some of us are blessed with every single member of our family. Good, honest, decent, hardworking person that fills your life with love and laughter and everything that our Hallmark card would tell you that you need to have in your life. And on the other hand, there are those of us that have, what should we call them, the white sheep of our families that challenge us. Some of them don't seem to do right. Some of them can't do right. Some of them don't know how to spell right. And some of them are never going to be right. That's just the hard fact. I would venture to say, however, that if you and me and everybody, within the sound of my voice, all of you from Xenia to Zimbabwe, listening to me this morning, if we all took our worst relative, we took him and we put him in the Superdome, we put them all in the Superdome, I think that they would still have some stiff competition of wrongdoing from the Bush family. I mean, if we took our worst relative, you know, some of us got those that are dope smoking, petty larcenous, major larcenous, abusive, bad relative, our worst. If we took the worst of the worst of our relatives and loaded them into the Superdome, all of y'all within the sound of my voice, pick one, and you loaded them into the Superdome, I do not believe that, first of all, they could compete with the five siblings that comprise the George Bush clan. And adding to that, his mama and his daddy. And all of the nephews and the nephewees, that would be nieces, that comprise that clan, all of our relatives couldn't compete with the level of the wrongdoings that come from that clan. And let me submit this to you, ladies and gentlemen of the jury. All of the wrongdoings of our relatives, of the worst of the worst of our relatives that we have out there, all of that, if you took all of their wrongdoing, none of their wrongdoing has had the impact of on every one of us in America that the wrongdoing from this one single family has had. Think about that. Think about that. Their wrongdoing from one clan, from one group, from one family of five children has had more negative impact on your life and everybody's life that you know than all of the wrongdoing of our one bad relative. Think about that. Because I want to talk about just one of the clan today. I just want to talk about one of the clan today. I want to talk about Neil Bush. I want to talk about Neil Bush. Neil Bush. You know him. He's the poster child of the savings and loans scandal, Silverado. Let me just remind you of something so that you understand, so that you feel me. So that you feel me on the point that I'm making. Ask me how much money the savings and loans cost the scandal. Just the savings and loan debacle headed by Neil Bush. Ask me how much money that cost America. $1 billion. That's with a B. $1 billion. Now, I know all of us have, I know many of us have a relative or two out there that steals stuff. Any of y'all relatives bringing in $1 billion? I'm telling you, if we put all of our relatives, I had a relative, I ain't ashamed. I had a relative whose job was falling down in front of buses in Chattanooga, Tennessee. That was his job. Every time that there was a bus crash, my relative was laying down in front of that bus before the doors of the bus opened up. That's how he made his living. He couldn't compare. My cousin couldn't compare to $1 billion stolen by Neil Bush. And I ain't done here. Neil Bush sounds, again, nuts don't fall far from the tree. Nuts don't fall far from the tree. He sounds just like his big brother. He recently got divorced, and part of the, ain't no sin in divorce. It happens to people all over this country, all over the world. But what the sin is, I don't know. I'm torn. Do they think we're stupid, or are they stupid? Or maybe it's both. These Bushes either are super, super, no, I think they think we're stupid. They think we're stupid. Neil Bush, during his trial of his divorce proceedings, 23 years he was married. And he admitted in the deposition that he had previously had sex with other women on trips to Thailand and Hong Kong at least 5 years ago. Okay, that's not something that is unique to the reasons why marriages fail. But what is unique is he thinks we're stupid. He thinks we're stupid. He said this under oath. How did the sex happen? This is what Neil Bush said. The women simply knocked on the door of his hotel room, entered and had sex with him. He said he did not know if they were prostitutes because they never asked for money and he did not pay them. Mr. Bush, you would have to admit that it's a pretty remarkable thing for a man to just go to a hotel room, open it and have a woman standing there and have sex with her. It was very unusual, he said. Ladies and gentlemen, I know this is normally not the morning conversation that you expect coming from me. But I have to say it. Because he thinks we're stupid. He thinks that we're stupid. Not only, and he said that under oath. Oh, no, the women just appeared at my door, knocked on the door, they came in, and then they left. He think we stupid. And right now, what is Neil doing? He is joining Reverend Sun Young Moon's world tour. He is going to be pushing Sun Yung Moon. He is kicking off the Eternal Peace Kingdom. And a few months back, he was in Washington, D.C., pushing Scientology. How are your relatives doing out there? How are your relatives doing out there? And I want to share one more thing with you about Neil that you may not have known, some conspiracy stuff. There was one little story about Neil. I'm just this is just, I just want y'all to know the dysfunction of this family. One, and this, and I'm telling you, this is back in 1981. So stay with me for a moment. There was one magazine that made mention of this story and Neil Bush's connection to the most, some would argue, the most significant story to come out of the 80s. There was a story that Neil Bush was connected to the shooting of Ronald Reagan. He was connected to the brother of Hinckley. Hinckley and Neil Bush had dinner the night before Ronald Reagan was shot. Hinckley and Neil Bush were questioned about this. There are those that would say, and that have argued, and articles that have been written, making a connection between Neil Bush, the Hinckleys, and the shooting of Ronald Reagan. Now, I don't know about you, but the dysfunction of my family doesn't begin to compales in comparison. And let me just add this one little kicker to you. Let me ask you this. We have had shenanigans by presidential siblings throughout history. How does it look to you today when you look at Neil Bush's billion-dollar savings and loan cover-up, thievery, actions? Neil Bush making $100,000 on a stock tip in one day and just calling himself very lucky. Neil Bush How do the shenanigans of Billy Beer, Billy Carter, and Billy Beer, and Roger Clinton, how do the shenanigans of those two men look in comparison to an impact on your life? Like the financial shenanigans and the financial criminality or criminal acts of Neil Bush. 4540400 is my phone number. 4546609 is my fax. How your bad relatives look right about now? 4546609 is my fax. And if you want a toll-free long-distance me, you can do that at 1-877-920-WGNU. That's 1-877-920-WGNU. And, you need to get up. You need to get to me. We have so much more to talk about. We're going to take a break, folks. I'm Liz Brown. This is The Wake Up Call. You need to get to me. Ooh, we have much to talk about. Stay with me.
this Christmas time. And you, so far from me. It's Christmas time. It's Christmas time. With mouth between us, I will not see the bells that chime. Oh, now at Christmas time, oh, the merry Christmas tree. 'Cause when you're gone.
Good morning, St. Louis. 31 minutes after the hour, 6 o'clock at AM 920 WGNU. I'm Howard Morton with this hour's traffic and weather. This hour's traffic is sponsored by American Express. Northbound 55 at Richardson Road is a disabled tractor trailer. Two right lanes are blocked and brakes are locked and traffic jams at Imperial Main. Eastbound 70 at 370 in Blanchette. Everything's on the move. Eastbound 44 between Lewis and Moraz Overpass. Look for no problems to report there. Eastbound 40 from 141 all the way into Brentwood. Everything looks good. Northbound 270 at 44 in Marshall. Traffic is building there. Westbound 270 from Bell Fountain all the way into Graham Hanley looks good. Westbound 5570 split at the Poplar Street Bridge is slow in the I-55 exit lane. Westbound 64 to 5570 merge looks good. Westbound Kingbridge traffic at Laclede's Landing, everything's on the move. And northbound Route 3 at Poplar Street Bridge, that ramp looks good as well. That is a look at this hour's traffic. This hour's traffic has been sponsored by American Express. Wish you could get that Range Rover for $5,000. American Express card members can. Today only at MyLifeMyCard.com. Terms and conditions do apply. Now taking a look at your WGNU forecast for today, tomorrow, Wednesday. Partly cloudy today, high in the upper 20s. This evening, partly cloudy with a low around 15. For Tuesday, partly cloudy skies, a high near 30. Tuesday evening, partly cloudy with a low near 10. And then on Wednesday, partly cloudy skies with a high in the mid-20s. Currently at the studios of AM 920 WGNU, we have 18 degrees. Lambert Field is reporting 17. Stay tuned for more of Liz Brown and the award-winning wake-up call. What's up next? We'll take another look at your news, traffic, and weather in the 7 o'clock hour. I'm Howard Morton for AM 920 WGNU.
A look at the strategy of the Iraq War. Pressure is mounting to begin a pullout, but have we really won anything yet? Secret interrogation locations, lack of precision munitions, covert news coverage sponsored by the military. Do we know exactly who it is we're fighting? Who established our policy? If we leave now, does this mean 2,000 Americans have died for nothing? An in-depth examination of our role in the fight against terrorism in Iraq with Carl Canetta, director of the Project on Defense Alternatives, and retired Colonel Douglas McGregor, defense policy expert and advisor to the Bush administration up to the start of the war, on the next edition of Mondays at 9.
See the 14th annual Celebration of Lights by car, train, or horse-drawn carriage in Fort Zumwalt Park in O'Fallon, Missouri. Gates open at 6:30 p.m. Tuesday through Sunday. Admission prices vary. Reservations are needed for some activities. For more information, call 636-379-5614. Something to light up your holidays from WGNU.
We're all looking for ways to get more mileage from a gallon of gas. I'm Energy Secretary Sam Bodman with steps you can take to save money by getting the most out of every gallon of gas that you buy. First, keeping your car tuned and in proper working condition can improve gas mileage by up to 40%. Replacing your air filter and keeping tires properly inflated improves fuel efficiency. When you can, avoid idling your car. Running your engine when you're not moving wastes gas and money. Obey the speed limit. Speeding reduces fuel mileage by up to 23%. Your gas mileage decreases rapidly once you get above 60 miles an hour. You have the power to make a difference. By taking these steps, you can save money and help our nation reduce its energy use.
For more tips on saving money at the gas pump, please visit our website at www.energy.gov or call toll-free 1-877-337-3463. This powerful savings message is provided by the U.S. Department of Energy and the Alliance to Save Energy.
examine life from the police perspective, put down the police scanner, and pick up Gary Wiegert on WGNU.net.
Science or religion, Republican or Democrat, politics, education, crime, or you just want to talk about Girl Scout cookies. What's your opinion? What's your solution? Tell me, Dave Linehan, on Radio Free St. Louis, WGNU, Monday through Friday, 4 to 6. Try your best.
Congratulations to Liz Brown, winner of two 2005 Excellence in Communications Awards from the Greater St. Louis Association of Black Journalists. Best Talk Show for Danny Glover Talks Politics on the Morning Wake Up Call. And with Joe Garcia, Best Spot News for the Global News Update Series. When we call it the award-winning Wake Up Call, we're not kidding. From everyone at Radio Free St. Louis, AM 920 WGNU, congratulations to Liz Brown on an outstanding job.
Informative, educational, provocative. This is the award-winning Morning Wake-Up Call with Liz Brown.
Just like Christmas, everybody seems to feel the same. Love is in the air all around us. It's magical how we all feel this way. I think every day should be like Christmas. Everyone has something nice.
Welcome back, welcome back, welcome back to the Wake Up Call. This is Liz Brown, living my life as an African and loving it. 454-0400 is my phone number, 1-877-920-WGNU. That's 1-877-920-WGNU. And if you want a toll-free long-distance me, you can do that at 1-877-920-WGNU. Email me at revolution@lizbrown.com or why don't you download one of the my archive shows at whiterosesociety.org. Any kind of, every kind of, all kinds of ways, get up, get to me. Steve on a car phone.
On one.
Start over again, please. Steve on a car phone, please.
Yeah, I have a couple of stories about Neil Bush, but I'm just going to zero in on one for the moment.
Mm-hmm.
It's now this testimony was expunged from the record, but I heard this on a station one time, a guy that was a witness to the testimony, that in 1981 or 1982, there was a CIA agent, they were staking out a plane, I believe it was Columbia. They were staking out a plane that was supposed to be loaded with cocaine. They were to wait until the cocaine was fully loaded on the plane, and then they were to seize the plane. Well, it turns out when the cocaine was loaded and the CIA and the others raided the plane, guess who they found up in that plane? They found not only Neil Bush, but George Bush Jr. Now, this came up in testimony before Congress, and it was expunged from testimony. But, you know, you realize...
But Go ahead.
You know, crack cocaine started sweeping across this country back in the early 80s. And, you know, you hear the stories about that came out of the San Francisco Chronicle, and it all starts putting pieces together.
Well, and the story that I was talking about earlier this morning about Neil Bush is the connection between the Hinckley family and the Bushes. Now, who was the vice president when Ronald Reagan was shot?
That's right. And he also
wait a minute. George W. Bush. I mean, George Bush's father. The Hinckleys are good. They're good family friends of the Bushes. And then Reagan gets shot.
Well, you know, Reagan didn't want to take on George Bush as his vice president. He was pressured from an outside interest group that told him unless he accepted Bush on his ticket, he would not be president.
Mm.
Reagan did not like Bush.
That's right.
That's right. Thank you very much.
All right, thank you. 454-0400 is my phone number. 454-6609 is my fax. Now, remember, Neil Bush told a Denver reporter that he met the brother of John Hinckley Jr. at a surprise party at the Bush's home 2 months before the assassination attempt, which was approximately 3 weeks after the U.S. Department of Energy had begun a routine audit on the books of the Vanderbilt Energy Corporation, the Hinckley Oil Company. On the morning of March 30, 1981, three representatives of the U.S. Department of Energy told Scott Hinckley, the vice president of operations for Vanderbilt Energy, that auditors had uncovered evidence of pricing violations on crude oil sold by the company from 1977 through 1980. The auditors were saying that the government was considering a penalty of $2 million. This is back in the 80s. The meeting ended a little more than an hour before Ronald Reagan was shot. Still unanswered is whether or not John Hinckley Jr. knew that an audit of his father's company was underway while he was living in the Hinckley home near Denver. After Sharon Bush, Neil Bush's wife, had told reporters that the Bush family knew the Hinckley family because of their contributions to the Bush campaign, both Washington and Houston offices of Vice President Bush said that they had checked every record and found no evidence of contributions to Bush from the Hinckley family. The truth is, however, that John Hinckley Sr. had contributed to Bush as early as his 1970s campaign for U.S. Senate. 454-0400 is my phone number. 454-6609 is my fax. Neil Bush lived throughout most of 1978 in Lubbock, where he served as a campaign manager for George W. Bush when George W. Bush ran for a U.S. congressional seat, and where young Hinckley also lived while attending Texas Tech University. Huh. Both Neil and George have admitted that it was certainly conceivable that they met Hinckley while in Lubbock. 454-0400 is my phone number. 454-6609 is my fax. Al.
Good morning, Miss Liz Brown.
Brother Al, good morning.
You know, while you're talking about the past, you know, we never did get no closure on that garage full of marijuana back there when you first come on the air. Remember that?
Yes, sir.
And they let the fella out of jail, Liz. But let's move on to this avian flu, Liz. All of a sudden, for some reason, it's been out and known about for the last 8 years. How come we're getting so bombarded with the avian flu all of a sudden, Miss Liz Brown?
I think it's just, it's astonishing and awe-inspiring how successful this avian flu campaign has been in terms of mischaracterization, trying to whip people up. When the issue really here with the avian flu is really the issue of the devastation that this illness will wrought on our bird population. It doesn't have anything to do with us.
Let me ask you something. In the province over in China, where they found 5 people have died from being in contact with poultry. They have 13 million people. I heard the man say they only have 150 doses of tamarind flu available over there to treat 13 million people. Now, we've had a fiasco in this country for the last 2 years. They started off this year running out of the regular flu the vaccine, right? Last year, people couldn't get it, and they were scared they were going to die from the regular flu. Now, they tell us if a pandemic hits in the next 10 to 15 years, we won't be prepared. So why keep driving this nail in this coffin about this avian flu?
Because it serves a purpose.
What is the purpose?
The purpose is to keep people scared and dependent upon their government, and you can manipulate people when they're fearful.
You know, Liz, I understand what you're saying, and I know what I'm thinking. It is a distraction from something that I must be missing that I should be paying attention to. What is it that they want us to dwell on?
Well, they want us to, remember, they want you to submit to the need of massive inoculations about anything. They want you to submit to the understanding that what was one of the things that George Bush asked for hidden within, not hidden, but placed within this discussion of the avian flu pandemic. He wanted the ability of the military to be in charge in times, instead of Katrina having the National Guard, the military should have been there, would have been there with if George Bush had his way. So there is an increased militarization. There is an increased understanding or push towards us submitting ourselves to the will of the military, to the will of the government, and doing what they tell us to do. Keeping us fearful. Red, orange alerts, all of that is to keep you fearful and not paying attention.
You have a nice day.
Take care of yourself. I'm Liz Brown. This is the Wake Up Call. We have much to talk about, and we're going to get some of that done in the next few minutes. But first, we have to take a break. 454-0400 is the phone number. 454-6609 is the fax. The toll-free long-distance number is 1-877-920. Get to me.
But do you recall the most famous reindeer of all?
Hey, Rudolph. Whoa-ho.
This is your wake-up call, global news update. Dateline Baghdad. Word has broken that the American military has been secretly paying newspapers in Iraq to publish pro-American news stories. According to the Los Angeles Times, the press pieces are composed by a unit called the Information Operations Task Force. They are then translated into Arabic and placed in Baghdad newspapers through a couple of subcontracting firms. One of them, the Lincoln Group, has a $5 million contract for the project, which was created when the Pentagon decided it had a credibility problem in Muslim public opinion. The report goes on to say that the operation has bought one Iraqi newspaper outright and has control over a radio station in Baghdad, although neither media outlet is overtly linked to the military. Many of the Lincoln Group staff pose as freelance reporters when they deliver their stories to the paper and station. The crafted stories strongly pitch the U.S. rebuilding effort and present the picture that most of the population in Iraq supports the coalition occupation. American law forbids the military from planting such stories in American media, but it's hard in a world of mass communications to separate foreign from domestic. Ironically, the State Department runs a workshop in Iraq that is supposed to train Iraqi reporters in basic journalism skill. The title of that class? The Role of Press in a Democratic Society. This is your wake-up call global news update.
Get in the show. AutoZone.
Looking
Looking for the perfect holiday gift for the do-it-yourselfers on your shopping list? Pick up some AutoZone gift cards. You choose the amount and let the do-it-yourselfers choose their own gifts. AutoZone is the place to find anything your do-it-yourselfer is looking for. From all the parts, tools, and accessories available in-store to more than 70,000 new items available through our new performance and accessory catalog. So get them what they really want this year and get in the zone. AutoZone.
If you're buying toys for Christmas, there are three things about toy safety you need to remember: toxic chemicals, choking hazards, and hearing damage. Allison Cassidy, director of U.S. PERG's Toy Safety Research Group, joins Liz Brown Tuesday morning at 8 with the results of her group's yearly assessment of the most dangerous toys on the market. You'll be a smarter toy shopper if you listen to the wake-up call Tuesday morning at 8.
I'm Dr. Laura Schlesinger. Join me from 2 to 4 every Monday through Friday afternoon on Radio Free St. Louis, AM 920 WGNU. And stay tuned for today's solutions with David Lenahan from 4 to 6.
Aw, are you thirsty?
If you're a cat owner, you should know subtle behavioral changes can sometimes be early signs of illness.
Wow, you really need a brushing.
Increased thirst, decreased grooming, and many other changes can be harder to detect in cats. And cat owners may not notice a change until the disease is advanced.
You don't seem yourself lately.
That's why every cat should receive a wellness exam twice a year. Wellness exams can help your veterinarian detect, treat, or ideally prevent health problems before they become serious.
I think it's time you had a checkup.
Call your veterinarian and schedule your cat's wellness exam today. Or visit avma.org for more information. A message from the American Veterinary Medical Association and your local veterinarians.
Next on Mondays at 9, a look at the strategy of the Iraq War. Pressure is mounting to begin a pullout, but have we really won anything yet? Secret interrogation locations, lack of precision munitions, covert news coverage sponsored by the military. Do we know exactly who it is we're fighting? Who established our policy? If we leave now, does this mean 2,000 Americans have died for nothing? An in-depth examination of our role in the fight against terrorism in Iraq with Carl Canetta, director of the Project on Defense Alternatives, and retired Colonel Douglas McGregor, defense policy expert and advisor to the Bush administration up to the start of the war, on the next edition of Mondays at 9. A voice for those that should be heard. This is the award-winning Wake-Up Call with Liz Brown.
I don't need a lot of presents to make my Christmas bright. I just need my baby's arms wound around me tight. Oh, Santa, hear my plea. Santa, bring my baby back to me.
Santa, bring my baby back to me.
The Christmas tree is ready. The candles all aglow. But with my baby far away, the good is a mistletoe. Oh, Santa, hear my plea. Santa, bring my baby back to me.
Santa, bring my baby back to
please
me.
Please make things rain. Hurry, when the time is drawing near. It sure won't seem like Christmas unless my baby's here. Oh, well, fill my sock with candy, an old bright and shiny toy. You wanna make me happy.
Welcome back. Oh, welcome back. Welcome back to the Wake Up Call. This is Liz Brown, living my life as an African and loving it. 454-0400 is the phone number. 454-6609 is the fax. My toll free long distance number is 1-877-920-WGNU. That's 1-877-920-WGNU. And if you want to email me, do that at revolution@lizbrown.com. revolution@lizbrown.com. You need to get up. You need to get to me. We have so much stuff to talk about. 454-0400 is the phone number. 454-6609 is the fax. Get up. Get to me. We have much, much, much to talk about. You're on the wake-up call.
Good morning, Liz.
Good morning, Ike.
Yes, I just want to comment about a few things I already know about. You were talking about Neil Bush and the drugs and kind of all. When Reagan was shot.
Turn your radio down, Ike, please.
When Reagan was shot, And when things settled in, they was all talking about Hinckley's daddy had a whole lot to do with this election and stuff. And right then, I started saying, this is awful close to be talking about something right now. And a man in prison got shot. But I'm glad the caller called in and spoke about that Hinckley, that Reagan didn't want Bush in the first place because he was kind of laid back. And I can remember back and I visualized what's going on with Bush Sr. He really wasn't too much, wasn't with the president during that 2 year term that he made. But getting back to this moron up there that runs the White House now, they had all this stuff you talk about, the Asian flu on 60 Minutes last night. Everything that the caller said was true. I said, but I told people, this is just another version that these people talking about to keep people's mind off the war. But how can you if you're a parent of someone that's dying for no reason? And like I said, this is not more than a pimp game gone political. It's about money. These fools can't turn out of it right away. It's because the same papers like 9/11, they're using Saddam Hussein. Is that another versionary tactic to drop you from him?
All right. Thank you, Ike.
All right.
454-0400 is my phone number. 454-6609 is my fax. There's this funny photograph of George W. Bush. You know how everybody's trying to do that whole... I guess to be newsy nowadays, you have to have the little scrolling messages on the bottom of your news stories that you're doing. Apparently people, the crawl, they call it the crawl. Apparently people don't watch the news or don't like to watch the news unless they have the crawl going across the bottom of the screen. Well, there's one that's a pretty funny one. There is a news press conference. And it captured this crawl in midstream. George W. Bush press conference, and the crawl at the bottom of the screen: Bush, one of the worst disasters to hit the U.S. He was referring to, I think, Katrina, but it was a confession. Bush, colon, one of the worst disasters to hit the United States. You think? There's a new Time poll out saying that 60% of Americans polled in the next presidential election, they would like the next president to be completely different from Bush. Marty, you're on the wake-up call.
Yes, Liz, you know, people this morning probably are worrying about that 42% Liquid gas rate that's coming, and it's been a very cold December. But I want to say real fast, you know, the talking heads on these business channels, you know, trying to say we're in a booming recovery, that Time poll says 63% say the economy is fair or poor. Only 34% say that it's good or excellent.
Yep, and they're the people that are saying that's good are the people that are making the money saying that it's good. Marty, welcome to the wake-up call.
Good morning, Liz.
Good morning.
Yes. I missed your show earlier, and I didn't know if anybody had brought up the fact about the money that was loaned out back in the savings and loan scandal.
With Neil Bush?
Yes.
The $1 billion that he lost with the savings and loan scandal, is that what you're talking about, Marty?
Right. And also that he had also loaned the money out, but there was certain laws to protect the Bushes as well as the people who borrowed the money,
mm-hmm.
where no charges could be brought against anybody.
Mm-hmm. Yes, sir.
I wonder if I missed that or not.
No one said that.
Oh, okay.
All right.
If you can elaborate a little bit on that.
All right. Thank you, Marty. I'm Liz Brown. This is the Wake Up Call. I will be back same time, same place tomorrow and in the next hour. How's that? We have a great show for you this morning. At 8 o'clock, the president of NOW, Kim Gandy, will be joining us. In the Mondays at 9 segment, we will be talking to Carl Canetta about where we are and why we should not stay in Iraq. There is an exit strategy. And we're going to hear about that in the Mondays at 9 segment. 2 hours from now. So stay with us.
I wait up for you, dear Santa baby. So hurry down the chimney tonight. Think of all the fun I've missed. Think of all the fellas that I haven't kissed. Next year I could be just as good if you check off my Christmas list. Santa baby, I want a yacht, and really that's not a lot.
WGNU, Granite City, St. Louis, 920 on your AM dial.
The latest from ABC News. I'm Joan Bennett. A stormy start to today's session of Saddam Hussein's murder trial in Baghdad. Defense attorneys, including former U.S. Attorney General Ramsey Clark, squabbled with the judge over the court's legitimacy and their security, then briefly walked out. Testimony has now resumed. ABC's Aaron Katursky is watching the trial in Baghdad.
The ultimate goal of Saddam's attorneys is to have him tried according to international law, not Iraqi law. The defense believes the Iraqi High Tribunal, as the court is known, is illegitimate because it was formed with American money while the U.S. was in charge here. His lawyers have told ABC News they will do everything in their power to stop the court from calling witnesses, and that is why they walked out of court when the judge refused to let them argue their motion.
Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice, leaving for Europe, responded to reports of secret CIA-run prisons in European democracies.
The United States has not transported anyone and will not transport anyone to a country when we believe he will be tortured. Where appropriate, the United States seeks assurances that transferred persons will not be tortured.
Reports of the existence of the secret prisons has caused a transatlantic uproar. No more rooms smelling of stale smoke at a major hotel chain. They're going smoke-free.
After the first of the year, you won't be able to ask for a smoking room in Westin hotels. They won't have any. USA Today reports the hotel chain will be the first to be smoke-free in the country. No puffing allowed in rooms, bars, restaurants in 77 Westin hotels in the U.S., Canada, and the Caribbean. A Westin official is quoted, "No one likes to walk into a smoky guest room. Not even smokers." Jim Hickey, ABC News.
President Bush focusing on the economy this week. He's heading to North Carolina today to tour a construction company plant where business is booming. This is ABC News.
My name is Sarah, and when I was about 17, I started Fry Farms. I sold our first load of pumpkins to a local Walmart. And one by one, my brothers came home from college to join me in the business. 10 years later, we're selling millions of cantaloupes, watermelons, and pumpkins that can be found in Walmart stores across the nation. Walmart appreciated the quality of the local produce, and the rural communities have thrived because of our business with Walmart. It makes me feel great. I love it.
This is the Secret Shopper Network.
I'm here at Michael's. They have an amazing selection of gifts for kids, teachers, everyone on my list. On sale now. No handheld gizmos or R-rated video games. They have creative educational activity sets, frames, scrapbooking, and a great selection of kids' art sets starting at just $3.88. Over and out.
This has been the Secret Shopper Network.
The gifts you need at a Michael's store near you.
At least 6 people are dead, more than 30 wounded in a suicide bombing in the northern Israeli town of Netanya. It's time to deck the halls or hire somebody else to do it, ABC's Steve Taylor explains.
Hiring somebody to design and hang your Christmas decorations. A Texas company says it's adding 5,000 to 6,000 customers a year and 30 to 40 franchises. One of the franchise owners in Maine projects he will decorate 50 homes and businesses this season at $500 to $10,000 a pop. He says the average cost is $1,500 but goes down if you use the same lights and decorations next year. Who buys this service? One businessman says his customers don't mow their lawns, they don't paint their own houses, and they don't put up Christmas lights. Steve Taylor, ABC News.
A hearing set for tomorrow in Portland, Oregon on who exactly owns Catholic churches and the property they stand on. The Archdiocese was the first in the country to file for bankruptcy because of settlements in the priest sex abuse scandal. Joan Bennett, ABC News.
WGNU News. I'm Peyton Colston. This report of WGNU News is brought to you by Missouri Lottery Scratchers. In the news, state and local officials are working to make sure a recent report in the Wall Street Journal about the future of the Hazelwood Ford plant does not come true. Hazelwood Mayor T.R. Carr says he'll do everything in his power to keep the plant open. Carr says the plant has a lot going for it and could be turned into a flex plant where any type of vehicle could be made. He also pointed out that closing the plant would affect the entire St. Louis region. Complete details of Ford's restructuring plans are not expected to be released until after the first of the year. And St. Louis Mayor Francis Slay is reacting to the possibility that the Hazelwood Ford plant may be closed. Slay says the plant closing would have a big effect on the city because quite a few plant workers live in the city of St. Louis. Slay says losing the Ford plant would be a big blow to the St. Louis region, which he sees as second only to Detroit in car manufacturing. Slay's comments come after that Wall Street Journal report that the Ford Motor Company will be closing five North American plants, including the Hazelwood plant. In other news, a St. Louis man will be retried in February on charges of shooting a St. Louis police officer. A judge declared a mistrial in the case of Tory Miller Friday after the jury failed to reach a verdict. Miller is charged with assaulting an officer and armed criminal action in connection with the 2002 shooting of Officer Robert Miller, who is no relation to the defendant. And another note on Mayor Francis Slay, he's remembering a prominent St. Louis developer. Slay says Don Breckenridge will be remembered for all he did for the city.
Don was a visionary, a committed city resident, just a gentleman, somebody I had a great deal of admiration for. Because of all of his efforts over the past several years to help make this Kiel Opera House become a reality, the renovation of that, it is still a doable project. But without him, obviously, it's going to be more difficult.
Breckenridge, whose projects included turning the Edison Brothers warehouse into a Sheraton hotel, died of cancer last week at age of 73. His past projects also included the DoubleTree Hotel in Chesterfield and the Renaissance Airport Hotel. A funeral for Breckenridge is scheduled for 11 this morning at Ladue Chapel. And that's a report of WGNU News brought to you by Missouri Lottery Scratchers. Add a little excitement to your day this holiday season and pick up some Scratchers tickets from the Missouri Lottery. They also make great stocking stuffers. I'm Peyton Colston reporting for WGNU News.
Good morning, St. Louis. 7 minutes after the hour of 7 o'clock at AM 920 WGNU. I'm Howard Morton with Hours Traffic and Weather. Hours Traffic is sponsored by American Express. Northbound 55 at Richardson Road, disabled tractor trailer. Two right lanes are blocked. Its brakes are locked and the traffic jams at Imperial Main. Southbound 170 onto the ramp to eastbound St. Charles Rock Road. There's a stall reported. Eastbound 70 at Dumbbell and 270. Look for everything to be running smoothly. Eastbound 44 from Bowles to Merrimack looks good. Eastbound 40 from Timberlake Manor to Brentwood, everything is running smoothly as well. Northbound 270 between Sappington and 44, you have slow traffic in pockets. Westbound 270 at Chain of Rocks Bridge all the way into Washington, Elizabeth, everything's running smoothly. Eastbound 70 between T.R. Hughes and 79, look for slow traffic. Westbound 5570 at 3rd Street all the way into the Poplar Street Bridge, look for slow traffic. Westbound 64 at the 5570 merge looks good. Westbound Kingbridge traffic from the 5570 split all the way into Laclede's Landing. Look for heavy volume. And northbound Route 3 onto the ramp of the Poplar Street Bridge. You've got slow traffic there. Hall at Adelaide, there's a report traffic lights are not working. And that is a look at this hour's traffic. This hour's traffic has been sponsored by American Express. Wish you could get that Range Rover for $5,000? American Express card members can. Today only at MyLifeMyCard.com. Terms and conditions apply. Now taking a look at your WGNU forecast for today, tomorrow, and Wednesday. For today, partly cloudy skies, high in the upper 20s. This evening, partly cloudy with a low around 15. Tuesday, mostly cloudy with a high around 30. Tuesday evening, partly cloudy with a low around 10. Then on Wednesday, partly sunny skies, but it'll only be a high in the mid-20s. Currently at the studios of AM 920 WGNU under clear skies, we have 18 degrees. Lambert Field is reporting 18 as well. Stay tuned for more of Liz Brown and the award-winning Wake Up Call. That's up next. We'll take another look at your news traffic or your traffic and your weather in the bottom of the 7 o'clock hour. I'm Howard Morton for AM 920 WGNU. Boom, 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 boom.
Santa baby, just slip a sable under the tree for me. Been an awful good girl, Santa baby, so hurry down the chimney tonight. Santa baby, a 54 convertible to light blue. I'll wait up for you, dear Santa baby, so hurry down the chimney tonight. Think of all the fun I've missed. Think of all the fellas that I haven't kissed. Next year I could be just as good if you check off my Christmas list. Santa baby, I want a yacht, and really that's not a lot. Been an angel all year, Santa baby, so hurry down the chimney tonight. Santa honey, one little thing I really need, the deed to a platinum mine, Santa baby, so hurry down the chimney tonight. Santa cutie, and fill my stocking with a duplex and checks. Sign your X on the line, Santa cutie, and hurry down the chimney tonight. Come and trim my Christmas tree with some decorations bought at Tiffany. I really do believe in you. Let's see if you believe in me. Santa baby, forgot to mention one little thing, a ring. I don't mean on the phone, Santa baby, so hurry down the chimney tonight. Hurry down the chimney tonight. Hi. Tonight.
Welcome back to the Wake Up Call. This is Liz Brown, living my life as an African and loving it. 454-0400 is my phone number. 454-6609 is my fax, and my toll-free long-distance number is 1-877-920-WGNU. That's 1-877-920-WGNU. Any kind of, every kind of, all kinds of ways. You need to get up. You need to get to me. We have all kinds of stuff to talk about. 454-0400 is the phone number. Get up. Get up. Get to me. Much, 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 much to talk about. And don't forget, you can always catch me on the World Wide Web at www.wgnu.net, where we are streamed on the World Wide Web. 454-0400 is the phone number. I would have to say that this administration is really distracted. They're so distracted they can't get a good coup on. You know? Can't get a good coup on. How is it that Hugo Chavez was able to have an election with no opposition? Clearly, Boy George is distracted. Clearly, his people are not doing what they would be doing if they weren't so distracted by, polls on a bullet train south, gas prices that are obscene, an economy that's tanking, despite all of the little mini riots that you saw trying to get into Walmart and get $700-$300 laptops. Oh, no, we only had seven. Despite those things, the economy sucks. People are scared. People are not going to be buying for Christmas this year because they're anticipating a 40% increase in their heating costs. How do you go out and buy things when you know that your gas may be shut off this winter because you may not be able to afford it? Anybody want to send up a prayer of thanks to Senator Jed Banks? Because he was a legislator that got them to pass the law saying that the cold weather rule where they can't shut your heat off when the temperature gets a certain degrees, gets to a certain point, they can't shut your heat off. Before, they could come in and shut your heat off at 12 degrees below zero. They can come and shut your heat off. But it was because of legislators. Do you think that Jed Banks would be able to pass that legislation in today's atmosphere? You think? You think he would have been able to do that? So when it gets cold, y'all need to be sending up a little prayer of thanks for legislators like Jed Banks, the late Jed Banks, who actually passed some legislation that has an impact on your life when gas prices, heating costs are going up 40%. Who's going to go out there and buy a couple of Barbies for their doll for their kids when they know that their heating prices are going to be the way that they are? So George Bush is distracted by all this stuff. Can't stay on task, can't get a good coup on. Because God knows that if he hadn't been so distracted, there would have been opposition to Hugo Chavez. Hugo just keeps rolling on. Check it out. Venezuela. This is just so funny. Obviously, George Bush is distracted. Venezuela, this is some bold stuff. I've got to give Hugo Chavez his props. No, his super props. Check this out. Venezuela on Thursday launched an ad campaign in the United States saying that we have cheap heating oil for Americans. That's some bold stuff. Full page ad. Under the banner, it says, how Venezuela is keeping the home fires burning in Massachusetts. The ad talks up a program to supply poor residents of the state with low-cost fuel from Citgo. Huh. Launched in Massachusetts last month, the program will also provide low-cost fuel to New York City. Advertisement appeared in New York Times, Washington Post, USA Today, and the Houston Chronicle. I just want y'all to feel me on this. Hugo Chavez took out full page ads in American newspapers. Now, mind you, again, George W. Bush is distracted. He can't get a good coup on. He can't pay attention to jumping on this brown man over here in Venezuela. Because had George W. Bush not been, it wasn't so weakened, you think that the New York Times would have taken that ad money? You think they could have put some pressure on the New York Times, the Washington Post, Houston Chronicle? You think that they would have, do you think the Houston Chronicle, if George W. Bush wasn't distracted, if George the Karl Rove wasn't saying, oh, damn, I thought the investigation was over. a new grand jury being seated. Everybody's distracted. It's not going to be a particularly merry, merry Christmas in the White House. Do you think if Karl Rove hadn't been distracted by a Christmas indictment possibility that the Houston Chronicle would have run a full-page ad from Hugo Chavez? Come on, y'all. Come on. Wouldn't have happened. It wouldn't have happened. Whew, Hugo Chavez is saying, you know what? I'm going to keep the pressure on. You got to keep the pressure on. He took out full-page ads. While we're all broke and tired and scared of freezing to death this winter, he took out a full-page ad and said, look over here. They want, you have these crazy pundits out here saying that I should be assassinated when I'm offering a solution to your problems. Am I? Hugo Chavez, y'all, is running two campaigns. He's running a campaign, a positive, powerful campaign in his own country. His people love him. And it's not just a campaign of smack talk like this administration runs, like Bill Clinton runs. This is a campaign of talk with action. An agenda. People are getting jobs. People are receiving medical care. People are getting educated. So he's running a successful campaign tied to actions in his own country, Venezuela. And now he's starting a doggone ad campaign here in this country. He ain't playing. Hugo Chavez ain't playing. He's running ads in United States paper saying, baby, I got some oil for y'all. Big old bad meanie, that old meanie George Bush trying to rip y'all off with oil. That's okay. I got some for you. Now who's the monster? Who becomes the monster in that scenario? Who becomes the bad guy in that scenario? George W. Bush is... George W. Bush and his administration having secret meetings with oil execs that have acquired the biggest profit in the history of corporations on the face of the earth, quarter profits. And they kept those meetings from us. George W. Bush's administration has had, through their elected officials, prevented oil executives from getting under oath, and the oil executives lied to us, and Bush hasn't had a problem with that. That's the side that George W. Bush is on. And the American people are seeing the side of George W. Bush protecting the oil industry, Hugo Chavez giving cheap oil, huh? Whose hand are you going to hold in that one? What side of the aisle are you going to take on that one? That's some bold stuff. That's some in-your-face stuff. That's some admirable stuff. One analyst, who was a scaredy cat, one analyst said, it's a publicity stunt. Really? And then the analyst went on to say, but it does give them some support about United support among U.S. regional politicians. It's not a stupid thing to do. You think? You think? Larry Creighton of the Massachusetts Energy, and they're the people that are helping to distribute the cheap fuel, said, Chavez has expressed his interest in helping poor people. Well, you got my vote, boy. You got my vote. You got my vote. They have seized upon the expected high heating bills this winter to curry favor among the U.S. population. You think if George W. Bush offered to provide or forced oil companies to provide cheap oil for poor people, you think he would get some support in the United States? He should. But I believe he's genetically incapable of doing that. But he could, you know, in a la-la land theory, let's just put every theory out there. If George W. Bush were to do something like that, He would get votes as he should. He would get support as he should. Instead, we're living in a time and a place in a world where the people that are concerned about the poor amongst us don't live in the United States. Ain't that some stuff? The president of the United States, as my baby Kanye West said, doesn't care about black folks, doesn't care about brown folks, doesn't care about poor folks, doesn't care about folks. And the president of Venezuela said, I got cheap oil for poor people. Let me, what's the term, what's the phrase? Hugo Chavez said, let me, what's the phrase? Let me bring it on. Let me bring the oil on. Woo! 454-0400 is my phone number. 454-6609 is my fax. Dolores.
Good morning, Dr. Brown.
Good morning, D.
Hugo's people love him.
Yes, they do.
We gonna love Hugo, too.
Apparently so.
He's doing a better job at manipulation than Boy George Group. About time.
Woo!
Somebody grew some nerve.
Woo! Or something.
Remember the story in the Bible about the old lady that didn't have any money for oil? Look like history is repeating itself.
It looks that way.
You know?
It looks that way.
Thanks for shouting the news to us, Dr.
All right now. All right. Thanks, D. 454-0400 is my phone number. 454-6609 is my fax. My toll-free long-distance number is 1-877-920-WGNU. And understand this, or feel this, y'all. Hugo Chavez is the country that George Bush is opposed to. Okay? Are you feeling me? George W. Bush is opposed to Hugo Chavez. A man that is bringing cheap oil in order to heat the homes of poor Americans. This is what this administration stands in lockstep opposition to. Now, the United States is holding hands with China. China has just purchased about 3,000 airplanes. Military airplanes included. Hugo Chavez just bought some airplanes also. And this is a question for the class, boys and girls. Which country has the United States raised alarm about having more airplanes? Venezuela or China? Now, I'm old enough to remember that China was our enemy, right? A lot of us out here are old enough to remember that. It wasn't that long ago. Wasn't China the enemy? Or better, what is it? Better dead than red? So, our good government hasn't said boo diddly about China's purchase of 3,000 airplanes, but they've lost their minds over Hugo Chavez's purchase of far fewer planes. I suspect, ladies and gentlemen of the jury, that Hugo Chavez has a few more tricks up his sleeve. And let me just throw this out there because I don't know everything. I work really hard to try to know as much as I can. But I have to admit to you, I don't know everything. I'm unaware if this is true or if this has happened. But I'm gonna put it out there, and y'all let me know if I'm incorrect. I dare say, Pat Robertson, who has called for the murder of the democratically elected president of Venezuela, Hugo Chavez. I dare say that Pat Robertson hasn't provided one teaspoon of heating oil to a single family in the United States. 1 teaspoon. And he's a millionaire. He's a multi-millionaire. He's an obscene millionaire. So help me, ladies and gentlemen of the jury. Hugo Chavez, Pat Robertson. Hugo Chavez, George W. Bush. Hugo Chavez, I'm just saying, which one of these people is doing more for poor people in the United States? George W. Bush or Hugo Chavez? And since the answer is Hugo Chavez, ain't this a wild world that we're living in right now? That a man who don't even live here is doing more for poor people than a man who was he wasn't elected. I'm sorry. The man that's sitting in the White House. Here's a poll I'd like to see taken. Who do you like better, Hugo Chavez or George W. Bush? That's a poll I'd like to see taken. Let's start taking it in Massachusetts first, where the cheap oil is. If they took the poll, the question would be, would they tell the truth about the results? My name is Liz Brown. I bet if Hugo paid for an ad in the paper, they'd print it right. My name is Liz Brown. This is the Wake Up Call. In the next hour, the president of now will be joining us, Kim Gandy. Oh, bells will be ringing. Yes, they will. My name is Liz Brown. Happy holidays to folks out there. Folks, stay warm. Keep listening. I'll be back in a few seconds. Stay with us.
Me greeting once again. Choirs will be singing silent night. Christmas carol back in the light. Please come home for Christmas. Please come home for Christmas. Not for Christmas, by New Year's night.
Good morning, St. Louis. 32 minutes after the hour of 7 o'clock at AM 920 WGNU. I'm Howard Morton. We'll look at the Sours traffic and weather. Sours traffic has been sponsored by American Express. Northbound 55 between Imperial Lane and Richardson Road, easing after an earlier tractor-trailer stall. Northbound 270 from Gravelway to 44, there's an accident, right shoulder, and it is backed up to 21. Eastbound 70 at 370, look for an accident, left lane jammed, approaching Mid Rivers Mall. Southbound 170 at eastbound St. Charles Rock Road. This stall has been cleared, but there may be a bit of a backup. Eastbound 40 between Clarkson and Woods Mill. Look for slow traffic. Westbound 270 between Riverview and New Florissant. Look for everything to be running smoothly. Eastbound 70 at T.R. Hughes and 79. Look for heavy volume there. Westbound 40 between Hanley. Look for that traffic to be lighter than normal. Westbound 5570 from 64 onto the Poplar Street Bridge. Stop and go traffic this hour. Westbound 64 to 5570 split is a little heavy and sluggish this hour. And westbound Kingbridge traffic from 5570 split all the way into Cleves Landing looks for heavy volume going on there. Northbound Illinois Route 3, that ramp onto the Poplar Street Bridge is slow now. All at Adelaide, those lights are not working. That's a look at this hour's traffic. This hour's traffic has been sponsored by American Express. Wish you could get that Range Rover for $5,000. American Express card members can. Today only at MyLifeMyCard.com. Terms and conditions apply. Now, taking a look at your WGNU forecast for today, tomorrow, and Wednesday. Partly cloudy today, high in the mid-20s. This evening, partly cloudy with a low around 15. For Tuesday, mostly cloudy with a high near 30. Tuesday evening, partly cloudy once again with a high with a low around 10. Then on Wednesday, partly sunny skies with a high in the mid-20s. Currently at the studios of AM 920 WGNU, we have 20 degrees. Lambert Field is reporting 19. Stay tuned for more of Liz Brown and the award-winning Wake Up Call. It's up next. We'll take another look at your news, traffic, and weather in the 8 o'clock hour. I'm Howard Morton for AM 920 WGNU.
Everyone at WGNU extends congratulations to Liz Brown, winner of two 2005 Excellence in Communication Awards from the Greater St. Louis Association of Black Journalists. Best Talk Show for Danny Glover Talks Politics on the Morning Wake-Up Call, and with Joe Garcia, Best Spot News for the Global News Update. Congratulations, Liz, from your friends and colleagues at Radio Free St. Louis, AM 920 WGNU.
Hi, it's Kevin.
And Sue McCarthy
of the Travel Planner Show. Every Saturday afternoon from 2 to 4 here on AM 920 WGNU.
If you have a travel question, we'll try to find the answer for you.
Tell a friend and tune us in. 2 to 4 Saturday afternoon on AM 920 WGNU.
Hello, I'm Franklin Graham. Hurricane Katrina was one of the worst natural disasters ever to hit the United States. There are literally tens of thousands of people who have lost their homes. It's going to take months, possibly years, for them to recover. And not only tens of thousands of homes, but an entire city of New Orleans flooded and have to be evacuated. Many of those homes will have to be bulldozed. But Samaritan's Purse is here. We need people's help. We need supplies. We need donations. We need your prayers. And if you would like to help, you can donate by going online to www.samaritanspurse.org or give by phone, and that is 1-800-567-8183. That's 1-800-567-8183. God bless you, and please remember to give and to pray for the folks here in Mississippi, Alabama, and Louisiana.
Is your church, school, or nonprofit organization holding an upcoming event, or does it have an ongoing program? We can help you get the word out free of charge here at WGNU. Just send a flyer or written information to WGNU Radio, Public Service Department, 265 Union Boulevard, St. Louis, Missouri, 63108. We ask 2 week lead time for any upcoming event. WGNU reserves the right to edit or reject any submission due to content and time considerations.
Next on Mondays at 9, a look at the strategy of the Iraq War. Pressure is mounting to begin a pullout, but have we really won anything yet? Secret interrogation locations, lack of precision munitions, covert news coverage sponsored by the military. Do we know exactly who it is we're fighting? Who established our policy? If we leave now, does this mean 2,000 Americans have died for nothing? An in-depth examination of our role in the fight against terrorism in Iraq with Carl Canetta, Director of the Project on Defense Alternatives, and retired Colonel Douglas McGregor, defense policy expert and advisor to the Bush administration up to the start of the war, on the next edition of Mondays at 9. Real life, on the cutting edge. It's the award-winning Wake Up Call with Liz Brown.
I'm dreaming of a white Christmas, just like the ones I used to know, where those treetops listen, and children listen to hear sleigh bells in the snow, the snow. So then I am dreaming of a white Christmas, with every Christmas card I write. May your days be merry and bright, and may all your Christmases be white.
I like that. 454-0400 is my phone number. 454-6609 is my fax. My name is Liz Brown. This is the Wake Up Call. WGNU Radio 920 on your AM dial. You can catch us on the World Wide Web at www.wgnu.net. You need to get up. You need to get to me this morning. Good morning.
Well, good morning, Miss Brown. How are you? Just beautiful today.
I'm outstanding, Mac. How are you?
I'm good. You got to be a little careful on some of them Christmas songs that you sing in there. You make people gas up and start traveling. So I slow down on a few. I'm not. Don't hit us so hard, you know, with them, right? It's a little while yet for Christmas.
It can't help it.
Anyway, let's go to this phone trafficking. You know, they got it. They watch us up and down our interstates and our automobiles, but that wasn't good enough. Now they're going to start to monitor your telephone calls. They done got interested in how much traffic on the highways.
Okay, what are you talking about, Mac? Break it down.
Monitoring your telephone conversation.
Who is? How is?
Your
what is?
Your state of Missouri.
Okay.
I think they start today.
Okay, doing what?
They're going to listen at your... they are going to start listening to your telephone conversation to monitor the flow of traffic, they say. That way you're going to be talking about how thick the traffic is on the highway, and that way they can monitor your conversation and keep data on the highway traffic. Now, if people think that they are crazy, that this is what this is coming into play for, if they can monitor your conversation about how high, how thick traffic is between Goodfella and Lucas and Hunt, they can also listen to any other conversation that you are carrying on.
Of course they can.
And this information now, it won't be free to whoever wants it. They're going to sell it to them. You have to pay a fee for it.
Who sell it to who?
Well, the company that's going to monitor this is, you know, they always get somebody out of town.
So wait a minute.
Don Hill, the director of the system management for the Department of Transportation.
So the Department of Transportation,
mm-hmm.
that and we live in a state where they're cutting Medicaid and cutting services to the poor,
mm-hmm.
is paying money to a company to listen in on our phone conversations.
On your cellphone.
On our cell phone conversations.
Mm-hmm. And you...
And how
you're
going to
be talking about how thick the traffic and where the backup's at. Now, this is what they only supposed to be using your conversation for.
But how would they know by listening to my phone conversation that when they get to me that I am talking about traffic? Because I've never talked about traffic on my cell phone conversation.
Well, they can also listen to what else you're talking about.
So they can pick random people's cell phones out there.
I don't think it has to be random. They can just pick in the conversation that they want to listen to.
That's what I'm saying. Random.
Right. And listen in on your conversation. Supposedly, you'll be telling them how thick traffic is, and they can monitor the flow of traffic. And they can say they can monitor the flow of traffic by the distance that you travel from the beginning of your conversation to the distance that you travel. They can tell how fast the traffic is traveling.
How many people will they hire, I'm just asking, to listen to my phone conversation? Because if you're going to stay on the phone with me from the beginning of my phone conversation to the end of it, it depends on who I'm talking to.
This is a two-term, which will cost $6.2 million for a two-year contract.
And we don't have money to pay for, I don't know, teeth examinations for babies.
Right.
Mm.
I think this thing goes in effect today. So people be aware of your conversation.
And you will never know whether they listen to your conversation or not.
Well, you know, they have listening devices now in your automobiles that they can tell, you know.
Well, my question is we will never know whether the state of Missouri listened in on our phone conversation or not.
Oh, no.
All right.
If you want to know, you can buy it.
I can go buy it from somebody?
I don't know whether you can buy it, but I imagine law enforcement can buy this conversation.
All right.
And people of interest can buy it.
All right. Thank you.
Okay.
454-0400 is my phone number. 454-6609 is my fax. You're on the wake-up call. Good morning.
Hi there. This is Ben from White Rose.
Hey, Ben. How are you?
I'm just fine. And as in a former life, I was a cell phone engineer. What they're doing is not listening to the conversations. As cell phones move along the road, they move from one cell into the next. And if you know, and the cell phone system always knows where your phone is if it's turned on. It knows what cell it's in. So as you're moving along the road and you move from cell 400 into cell 401, they know what time that happened. And then when you move into cell 402, they know what time that happened. They know how long it took you to get from A to B. And when you have you know, for a single cell phone, that doesn't mean much because you might have stopped or pulled off or done something. But when you look at, like, the great mass of cell phones, you know, the hundreds that are moving along a particular road, you can get an average speed of the road that way.
Are they looking at a cell phone by virtue of its phone number, or are they just by the signal that it's emitting?
Just by the signal that it is emitting, which, you know, ties back to the cell phone's number, but really in the cell phone system, it's just an electronic ID.
Should anybody have any concern about anybody being able to listen in on the conversations that they're actually having with people?
No one's actually listening in, and in fact, I believe the laws are written in such a way as to make that illegal, even though anyone can do it with a scanner.
And are other states, are you aware of other states doing anything like this, Ben?
I have heard about other places doing this. The fear is that at some point in the future, they will have this data and they will know that you were speeding.
Oh, so it's kind of like rent a car, it's putting those GPS things in the cars, and so that they can track whether or not you cross state lines and
yep.
how fast you've been traveling.
Or the Illinois Tollway iPass.
And what is that?
That's a little electronic thing. They doubled the tolls up here near Chicago,
mm-hmm.
and if you didn't want to have your tolls doubled from 40 cents to 80 cents per station. You had to buy this little electronic box to put in your windshield that would automatically record your passage through the toll lane and charge your credit card.
And then also be able to see how fast you're going.
And, well, that's the fear, is that they could, in fact, because they've got you getting onto the tollway and getting off the tollway, and they know how many miles are between point A and point B. So, yeah, it's entirely possible that at some point in the future that could, you know, it's already been subpoenaed in criminal cases to provide alibis.
Wow. Wow. Well, thanks, I think.
Okay, take care.
All right, Ben, take care. 454-0400 is my phone number. I'm Liz Brown. This is the Wake Up Call. We have much to talk about. Stay with us. Thanks for clearing that up.
The stars are bright, they shine. It is a night of the dear Savior's birth. Long lay the world.
This is your wake-up call global news update. Dateline Beijing. The huge benzene spill that took place in China 2 weeks ago is still having repercussions. A second city now, Jiamusi, with a population of nearly 500,000 people, had to shut down its municipal water plant on Friday because the benzene is working its way down the Songhua River. Now, even further down the river from there, the Russian border city of Khabarovsk will likely be affected within the next week or so. An explosion at a chemical plant in Harbin, China, caused that city's water system to be shut down for almost a week. And Dateline Baghdad, another mysterious suicide of a high-ranking American officer in Iraq. Colonel Ted Westhusing, one of the Army's top experts on military ethics, was found dead from a bullet wound to his head at the Baghdad airport in June. When he died, he was into an investigation of a military contractor based in Virginia on fraud and human rights abuses. The contractor, U.S. Investigation Services, had ties to the Carlyle Group, which is the same company accused of shipping deadly nerve gas to the government of Saddam Hussein in the late 80s. Westhusing's family is not accepting the military's version of his death, saying there was no reason for him to kill himself in the prime of his life. He served with special forces units in Honduras, South Korea, and Italy. The Army says a suicide note was found in his own handwriting.
This is your Wake Up Call Global News Update. If you're buying toys for Christmas, there are three things about toy safety you need to remember. Toxic chemicals, choking hazards, and hearing damage. Allison Cassidy, director of U.S. PERG's Toy Safety Research Group, joins Liz Brown Tuesday morning at 8 with the results of her group's yearly assessment of the most dangerous toys on the market. You'll be a smarter toy shopper if you listen to the Wake Up Call Tuesday morning at 8.
Is the IRS ruining your life? Are you afraid of losing everything? You can end the despair you feel right now. Get ready to write down an important phone number you're going to need to solve your IRS nightmare. The number is 800-376-9913.
Hello, I'm John Harris, president of J.K. Harris & Company, the nation's largest tax representation firm. IRS problems have a way of ruining every aspect of your life if you let them. Our former IRS agents and tax professionals have successfully negotiated settlements for thousands of our clients, saving them millions of dollars.
According to IRS statistics, the average settlement for accepted offers and compromise was between 12 and 15 cents per tax dollar owed, which means you could qualify to reduce your tax debt by as much as 85%. If you owe the IRS back taxes, call J.K. Harris at 800-376-9913. You may qualify to dramatically reduce your tax debt. Call 800-376-9913. That's 800-376-9913.
When you discover something of true value, that pearl of great price, you take special care of it. The 30th Annual Chuck Norman Charity Christmas Party celebrates its pearl anniversary this year by honoring those who help others throughout Metro St. Louis. This year's party is from 3 to 7 p.m. Sunday, December 18th at Orlando Gardens, 8352 Watson Road. The parking is free. The ticket price of $10 per person includes a family-style buffet, a DJ from Complete Music Company, the Jerry Stretz Professional Dancer, and the Sweet and Sassy Dancers continue the tradition of great entertainment. There are also drawings for door prizes, including, what else, a 30th anniversary set of pearls. Donation-only tickets are also available at $5 each. Seating is limited to 500 persons, so get your tickets now and don't be disappointed. They're available from B Parks at AARP, Martha West at Gateway Hubert Wheeler School, Rita Caffey at Contemporary Living Options, or from Radio Free St. Louis, AM 920 WGNU. The 30th Annual Chuck Norman Charity Christmas Party, Sunday, December 18th, 3 to 7 p.m. at Orlando Gardens, 8352 Watson Road in Webster Groves.
Next on Mondays at 9, a look at the strategy of the Iraq War. Pressure is mounting to begin a pullout, but have we really won anything yet? Secret interrogation locations, lack of precision munitions, covert news coverage sponsored by the military. Do we know exactly who it is we're fighting? Who established our policy? If we leave now, does this mean 2,000 Americans have died for nothing? An in-depth examination of our role in the fight against terrorism in Iraq with Carl Canetta, Director of the Project on Defense Alternatives, and retired Colonel Douglas McGregor, defense policy expert and advisor to the Bush administration up to the start of the war, on the next edition of Mondays at 9. What you need to know, when you need to know it. The award-winning Wake Up Call with Liz Brown.
Welcome back to the Wake Up Call. This is Liz Brown, living my life as an African and loving it. 454-0400 is my phone number. 454-6609 is my fax. Give to me. Sheila, good morning.
Good morning. The man before me, he was very informative about the cell phones and things jumping from tower to tower and as far as the speed. But just about everybody owns a cell phone now. So what about the people who ride the buses? What about the people who ride the express buses and they go from speed to speed. So all of this really doesn't even make any sense. It's just another way to keep track of you.
Well, I mean, it does make sense in a lot. Well, let me just throw something out there as a possibility. I think if the cell phone is moving from point A to point B at 50 miles an hour, and a cell phone is moving from cell point to cell phone cell place at 100 miles an hour, or not 100 miles, but 80 miles an hour, I think that you can extrapolate out if someone is riding driving a car, or if somebody is riding some kind of public transportation. I think that you can tell by the movement of it. I would theorize that you could do that. I think that your second point about them trying as a way to ease us into, or ease them into, keeping tabs on us. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah. So what everybody should do is get together and stop using their cell phone.
You know what that would be? I think that I rarely say that things are impossible, but I would argue to you, that's like saying stop using the internet. It's not going to happen. It's not going to happen.
I know. It's modernization and technology moving on, but we're moving on. We're kind of strangling ourselves.
I would agree in a lot of ways we are.
And opening ourselves to all kinds of things.
I think that there are some things that we can do to be more cautious about our cell phones and in terms of privacy. I think that there are things that we should start thinking about, whether or not we need to have our cell phones on all the time, whether or not just things like, I think, and you know what, and maybe I'll do a show on that, the caution that we should exercise with some of the modern technology that is inescapable in our lives now.
I only use mine for emergencies, like I'm talking to you now, but I keep mine on when I leave home because of my husband and my daughter, her being in school and sometimes my husband getting ill. But when I'm at home, it's off, period.
And see, I can't do that because I conduct business on my cell phone, so my cell phone is on all, you know, I probably shouldn't have said that. you know. But anyway, we're going to pass on.
Okay.
Thanks for your call, Sheila.
You're welcome.
454-0400 is my phone number. Neil, good morning.
Yes, good morning, Liz Brown. And I'm so proud of you.
Well, you.
I enjoy your program, and you are down through the year. You're so enlightened.
Thank you.
I was so glad to hear Al call you this morning. I had three callers that I used to love to call you up because they would steam you up, and you was always ready for them, and that. The one was little David, the cab driver, and he died on it.
I know. Bless.
Yes.
I miss him.
Yeah, definitely. I miss him. I never met him, but I just love he always wanted to call in just to see if you was ready for it.
I loved his calls. I miss him.
Yes.
I truly do.
Yes, and the Roosevelt man, he comes up with some good questions, but he goes too far back. He goes back into my time because he and I more or less are pretty close to the same age. But Al called you this morning, and I always love to hear from Al. And Al tickled me this morning because he called you and he wanted to fire you up. And you answered every question too easy that he asked you about, and he just told you, you have a nice day. That's my man, Al.
All right, Neil.
Liz, what I call you for right quick, and I'm going to get off from here, what you are saying about the I can't pronounce his name, but the man who wanted to produce heating oil for poor people in America.
Hugo Chavez.
I read that in the New York Times on the 22nd of October edition of the New York Times, and he was in there. It was also stated that even Mexico, the new person who wants to run for president, because the one that's in there right now dances directly to George Bush's music.
Right.
The one that'll run in, who want to run against him, saying that we have heating oil running over that we can produce to the American people if it's allowed.
All right.
So all of this stuff, it's a shame that the American people is listening to so many lies from George Bush. All right, I'm going to let you go because news coming up.
All right.
I enjoy you there.
Thank
Bye-bye.
You so much. Marty.
Hey, Liz, how you doing this morning?
I'm outstanding. We have 2 minutes here. Talk
okay,
to me.
You know what? People have to start believing that whatever can happen
will happen.
That they see that they can't do. And what better way to put the number of the beast on somebody is by using something that they use every day and can't do without, you know?
Mm.
And they can find, you know, with that satellite that they got in the sky and a bunch of other stuff that they got planned in the sky, people can be found with no problem. And since your cell phone puts out a specific signal, if they decide to key down on that signal, they can find you.
All right now.
You can be found.
All right.
You got that thing on you. That's just like putting a walkie-talkie in your back pocket, in your pocket, on your hip or whatever.
If they have your number, they know where you are.
Yeah, and if they can look at a satellite from space, I mean, look at a license plate from space and find out what the license plate on the car is, the ground, why not be able to use your cell phone to find out who you are, where you are, if they want to find you.
Thank you, Marty. Listen, folks, in our next hour, we will be joined by the president of NOW, Kim Gandy, to talk about Alito. Stay with us.
If you check off my Christmas list, Santa baby, I want a yacht, and really that's not a lot.
WGNU, Granite City, St. Louis, 920 on your AM dial.
The latest from ABC News. I'm Joan Bennett. Theatrics from the defense table as Saddam Hussein's trial resumed today in Baghdad. ABC's Nick Watt was in the courtroom when defense lawyers walked out after squabbling with a judge over security and the legality of the proceeding itself.
Former U.S. Attorney General Ramsey Clark, who's now on Saddam's legal team, led the revolt. And just before the court went into recess to work out what to do, Saddam got on his feet and shouted, "Long live Iraq." Then his half-brother and former intelligence chief screamed at the judge, "Why don't you just execute us now?" After the recess, emotional and tearful testimony from a man who was just 15 years old back in 82 when the more than 140 men were allegedly executed by Saddam's forces in the town of the jail.
In Netanya, Israel, a suicide bombing at the entrance to a mall killed five people plus the bomber. Police say as soon as an officer made eye contact with a bomber, he reached into his bag and set off his explosives. Two militant groups have claimed responsibility. A strong earthquake has hit East Africa in the Lake Tanganyika area. Hundreds of people were evacuated from office buildings in Nairobi, Kenya, and Kigali, the capital of Rwanda. No reports of injuries. Chorus of criticism from the now disbanded 9/11 Commission.
In short, the 9/11 Commission members complain the government is failing to protect the country. Former chairman, one-time Republican governor Thomas Kane.
A lot of the things we need to do, really to prevent another 9/11, just simply aren't being done by the president or by the Congress.
White House counselor Dan Bartlett says the president is doing everything he can to protect the American people, but admits
we need to do more. Congress needs to do more.
The former commission members say it is not a case of if there is another terrorist attack, but when. Jim Hickey, ABC News.
Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice, on her way to Europe, says the U.S. will use every lawful weapon against terrorists. This is ABC News.
Dear Gold Bond, I'm a nurse, and washing my hands all day makes my skin raw.
Here's a real letter from Victoria, Connecticut, about our ultimate healing lotion.
What a wonderful product. I feel it working even after I've washed my hands.
Goldbond Ultimate Healing Lotion penetrates fast to help heal rough, cracked skin with 7 intensive moisturizers plus 3 vitamins. It's long-lasting, too.
It works better than any lotion I've ever used.
Can your lotion do that? Goldbond Ultimate Healing Lotion.
This stuff really works.
Get the good stuff.
Looking for the perfect holiday gift for the home handyman or handywoman? Check out Napa's 38-piece homeowner tool set. It features a gear driver soft grip ratcheting screwdriver with interchangeable shafts to help you tackle any job fast. This set also includes sockets, an adjustable wrench, hammer, tape measure, level, nails, screws, picture hangers, and more. Plus a high-quality wide-mount tool bag, all for just
$49.99. Get the good stuff.
Napa. Get the good stuff.
Wedding bells ringing today for same-sex couples in Britain. ABC's Linda Alvin in London, where civil partnerships are legal starting today.
More than 4,000 gays and lesbians are expected to get partnered here in the UK over the course of a year, with pop star Elton John expected to lead the way. The legislation will guarantee to same-sex civil partnerships the same sorts of rights on tax and inheritance extended to married heterosexuals. Government Minister Meg Munn says any resistance appears to have melted away.
The registrars are doing everything to make this a really special day for people
people who, after all, have waited a very, very long time. Meanwhile, companies are cashing in, selling everything from single-sex cake-topping figurines to his and his towel sets. Linda Albin, ABC News, London.
It's a time of year for aching backs for those who transport your holiday gifts. UPS deliveries soar by 43% during the holidays, forcing the company to hire up to 60,000 additional workers. I'm Joan Bennett, ABC News.
I'm Peyton Colston reporting WGNU News. This report is brought to you by Missouri Lottery Scratchers. In the news, the St. Louis region could be in for a devastating blow should the Hazelwood Ford plant close. A report in Friday's Wall Street Journal indicates that the plant is one of five the automaker will close due to sagging sales. St. Louis Mayor Francis Slay says the closure of the plant would be bad for the city of St. Louis.
A lot of people who live in the city work out at that plant, so it's going to impact their jobs and it's going to impact the employment levels in the city. I mean, this has been known for a long time as, I think, the second largest manufacturer of automobiles.
The report in the Wall Street Journal indicates that Ford is closing five plants, including the one in Hazelwood, which had previously been on the chopping block in 2002. Complete details of Ford's restructuring plans are not expected to be released until after the first of the year. St. Louis Archbishop Raymond Burke says the hiring of a new priest at St. Stanislaus Kostka Parish causes further damage to the unity of the church. St. Stanislaus' board of directors has hired Father Marek Bozek of the Springfield-Cape Girardeau Diocese as its priest. Springfield-Cape Girardeau Bishop John Liebreicht says he has suspended Bozek from priestly ministry for leaving his assignment without permission. Archbishop Burke says taking part in a mass celebrated by a suspended priest is gravely sinful. St. Stanislaus priests were removed last year after the board refused to turn over financial control to the archdiocese. And the population of the city of St. Louis is actually increasing rather than decreasing as previously thought. That's according to St. Louis Mayor Francis Slay, who says the U.S. Census Bureau has changed its July 2004 population estimate for the city. The change comes after the city challenged the Census Board for calculating the city's population by using a county formula rather than the city formula. The revised estimate raised the city's population from just over 343,000 to more than 350,000. And finally, this is expected to be the busiest holiday travel season since before 9/11. That's according to the Travel Industry Association, which is reporting that U.S. households generated nearly 700 million trips last year. Chris McGinnis, the director of Travel Skills Group, attributes this to several factors.
With the economy doing well and fares still relatively low, I think that we're going to see a very busy holiday travel season, especially on those days just before Christmas and New Year's, which both fall on Sunday this year. So you're looking at Thursday, Friday, and Saturday before those holidays being very, very busy and unlikely that any deals are left. It's unlikely that any seats are left.
Officials with Lambert St. Louis International Airport advise travelers to arrive extra early during the holiday season in anticipation of heavier volume. And that's a check of WGNU News brought to you by Missouri Lottery Scratchers. Add a little excitement to your day this holiday season and pick up some Scratchers tickets from the Missouri Lottery. They also make great stocking stuffers. I'm Peyton Colston with WGNU News.
Good morning, St. Louis. 7 minutes after the hour of 8 o'clock at AM 920 WGNU. I'm Howard Morton with a look at the Sours Traffic and Weather. Sours Traffic is sponsored by American Express. Westbound 44, Jameson is an incident and clear. That's cleared now, and all lanes are now open. Traffic is easing by. Northbound 55 between Merrimack Bottom Road and Germania, no problems with 40. Eastbound 44 from 141 all the way to 270, everything's on the move. Eastbound 40 from 141 to Mason, everything still looks good there. Northbound 270 from Teson Ferry to 44, look for stop and go traffic. Westbound 270 from Bell Fountain all the way into New Forest Road. Everything's on the move. Eastbound 70 from T.R. Hughes to 79. We've got heavy traffic going on there. Westbound 40 between McCausland and Hanley. Slow traffic. Eastbound 40 slows after Ballas all the way to Lindbergh. And no more delays until you get to the Hanley exit. Eastbound 44 between Shrewsbury and Jameson, slow due to an earlier westbound incident. People are slowing to take a look. Westbound 5570 at 64 in the Poplar Street Bridge, stop and go traffic in your 8 a.m. commute. Westbound 64 between 15th and the 5570 split. It is slow this hour. Westbound Kingbridge traffic from 5570 all the way into Laclede's Landing. Look for heavy volume there. And northbound Route 3 from Monsanto onto the Poplar Street Bridge, you have slow traffic as well. This hour's traffic has been sponsored by American Express. Wish you could get that Range Rover for $5,000. American Express card members can. Today only at MyLifeMyCard.com. Terms and restrictions do apply. Now taking a look at your WGNU forecast for today, tomorrow, and Wednesday. Partly cloudy skies today, high in the upper 20s this evening. Partly cloudy with a low around 15. Tuesday, mostly cloudy. High around 30. Tuesday evening, partly cloudy with a low around 10. And then on Wednesday, partly sunny skies, but it's deceiving. The highs will only be in the mid-20s. Currently at the studios of AM 920 WGNU, we have 20 degrees. Lambert Field is reporting 19. Both under sunny skies. Stay tuned for more of Liz Brown and the award-winning Wake Up Call. That's up next. We'll take another look at your traffic and weather in the bottom of the 8 o'clock hour. I'm Howard Morton for AM 920 WGNU. Boom, 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 boom.
Baby, just slip a sable under the tree for me. Been an awful good girl, Santa baby, so hurry down the chimney tonight. Santa baby, a 54 convertible to light blue. I'll wait up for you, dear Santa baby, so hurry down the chimney tonight. Think of all the fun I've missed. Think of all the fellas that I haven't kissed. Next year I could be just as good if you check off my Christmas list. Santa baby, I want a yacht, and really that's not a lot. Been an angel all year, Santa baby, so hurry down the chimney tonight. Santa honey, one little thing I really need, the deed to a platinum mine, Santa baby, so hurry down the chimney tonight. Santa cutie, and fill my stocking with a duplex and checks. Sign your X on the line, Santa cutie, and hurry down the chimney tonight. Come and trim my Christmas tree with some decorations bought at Tiffany. I really do believe in you. Let's see if you believe in me. Santa baby, forgot to mention one little thing, a ring. I don't mean on the phone, Santa baby, so hurry down the chimney tonight. Hurry down the chimney tonight. Hurry. Tonight.
Welcome back, welcome back, welcome back to the Wake Up Call. This is Liz Brown, living my life as an African and loving it. 454-0400 is my phone number, 454-6609 is my fax, and my toll-free long-distance number is 1-877-920-WGNU, and if you want to email me, do that at revolution@lizbrown.com. And don't forget, if you missed an hour, first of all, shame on you. Second of all, you can go get it. You can go get it at whiterosesociety.org. Oh, my goodness. Oh, my goodness. We've been talking about George W. Bush this morning. We've been talking about Hugo Chavez this morning. And now I want to switch a little bit and go to Seattle just for 1 second. We just had an editorial in today's paper from the Seattle PI. And they're talking about Judge Samuel Alito. And the Seattle PI has said in their editorial from this morning is Alito's strong intellectual background, including his judicial service, must not spare him from intense, fair examination by the U.S. Senate in the hearings next month. What is known already reveals a man who at times has been remarkably unsympathetic to the rights of Americans generally, and women and minorities in particular. Bizarrely, writes the Seattle PI, in a 1985 memo, Alito wrote, while seeking a Reagan administration promotion, assaulted not just abortion rights and affirmative action, but also the bedrock principle of one vote, one person, one vote, which protects everyone's right to equal representation. We need to talk about Judge Alito because the hearings are coming up. And we're going to do that this morning with the president of NOW, joining us from Washington, D.C., Kim Gandy. Kim, good morning.
Good morning, Liz.
How are you?
I'm doing great.
Very good. Well, the Seattle PI has said that Alito bizarrely wrote
It seems bizarre to us, but apparently the Reagan administration thought it was a fine job qualification.
Let's talk about that memo. What do we know about this memo?
Well, we know that he's been trying to distance himself a little bit from that memo, saying, "Well, I was just looking for a job when I wrote that." And of course, my reaction was, so he's going to fudge when he's applying for a job, and he's going to say things that aren't true. I wonder if that was the case when he was looking for a job in 1990 and told the Senate Judiciary Committee, promised in writing, that he wouldn't sit on any cases involving Vanguard, and then sat on 4 cases involving Vanguard.
Well, apparently,
maybe he was lying to get a job then, and whether he might be doing that right now to get another job,
or that he would say anything to get a job.
That's right.
Can you give us the quote exactly of what he said in that memo should be cause for people to really look closely at whether or not this man should be sitting on the Supreme Court?
You know, unfortunately, I don't have the memo in front of me. I got back from El Paso in the wee hours of this morning.
Well, as I understand it,
didn't bring it back from the office, but I bet you've got it there that you could read it.
Here's what I have. Quote, I am particularly proud of my contributions in recent cases which the government argued that the Constitution does not protect a right to an abortion.
Well, and he also went on to talk about he called them quotas, but of course this was the Reagan administration, and anything that was affirmative action, even if it had nothing whatsoever to do with quotas, they called it a quota because that's what they did at that time. So that's how, you know, he used a little bit of code language in that memo, but it was very clear what he meant, and in fact, that's what he's gone on to do in terms of the decisions that he's made. And one thing in particular that really, of course, there are a lot of things that stand out about his decisions over a course of 15 years on the appellate bench, but one that stands out in my mind particularly is, for a different reason, but standing in the doorway of the courthouse. He didn't stand in the schoolhouse door. He stood in the courthouse door and kept people from getting into court with their claims of discrimination and harassment on the job.
And I think one of the issues concerning Alito is, like the Seattle PI wrote, that it's not just women. It's not just black folks, brown folks, yellow folks, red folks. It's people in general. He has stood in the door of everybody.
Sure. Just cases of people discriminated against based on their disabilities, people discriminated against based on their religion. And it wasn't that he so much ruled against them himself. He ruled against their even getting a chance to get into court and have their case heard in the first place. Cuts them off before they can even get into the courthouse to make their case, or tries to. Fortunately, he was very, very often in the minority, sometimes the only one of the whole, all 13 judges on his circuit. Sometimes he was the only one in the dissent arguing that the plaintiffs should not be allowed to even have their day in court in front of the judge and juries. Fortunately for the people in that jurisdiction, he was so often in the minority, but he was in the minority in a way that was really out there.
Well, the challenge, Kim, is getting this information out during the hearing process. And there's an article that came out of Slate just today, and it raises the question of the problem that faces all of the senators is that, and I'll read from Slate, it says, by the absurd unwritten rules of these increasingly stylized episodes, referring to the hearing process, they are not allowed to ask him, and he is not allowed to ask the major question. And that's the challenge, isn't it?
I think it's a bit of a challenge, except that I believe that the questions are being asked, and they're being asked in private, behind closed doors, and it's the same thing that happens, frankly, with Roberts. Roberts would go in, and he would visit these arch-conservative senators, and he would come out, and they would pronounce themselves satisfied. And then he would go in, and he'd visit with liberal senators, and he would walk out, and the liberal senators would say, well, I had a very, very good conversation. I was very satisfied with what I heard. Well, you know, anybody with two bits of brain to put together can figure out that he's telling two different things behind those closed doors. But nobody will ever know that because the question's not being asked in public, so that he's forced to give the same answer to everybody.
Are they allowed? Are the senators allowed to ask that question, the major question?
I think the senators are allowed to ask anything they want to ask. For instance, they didn't seem to mind asking about the marital birth control case, right? They asked about that, and Griswold versus Connecticut was the case. They asked about Griswold, and Roberts answered about Griswold. Of course, he gave the same answer that Clarence Thomas had given, and then he gave the exact answer that Clarence Thomas, I mean, almost literally to the word, that Clarence Thomas had given about Roe versus Wade, although for some reason they've decided that even though Griswold and Roe were decided less than a year apart, that under some, you know, obscure reasoning, that it's okay to ask what their opinion is about Griswold, but it's not okay to ask what their opinion is about Roe, even though the two cases were decided less than 9 months apart.
So how do the Democrats get around that? How do they get to the answer to that question?
If I were a Democratic senator, I would say, if you don't answer, this question is of critical importance to me, and if you don't answer this question, then you don't get my vote. But honestly, at this point, I wouldn't need to ask the question. It is clear to me from what he has written that he is not only supportive of repealing Roe versus Wade, that he would stand in the door of the courthouse for people seeking redress for race and sex discrimination and racial and sexual harassment and disability discrimination and religion discrimination and everything else. He would repeal the Family and Medical Leave Act. We've seen that from what he's written already. And it would not matter what he said during the hearing. He could announce to me as a senator that he had had a nomination conversion and had changed his mind about all of those things, and he was going to be different from now on if only I would give him a lifetime appointment? And I wouldn't believe it for a second, and why should I? Why should any of the senators really care what he says during the hearing?
And, Kim, are we hearing any of the senators saying close to what you just said?
Not too much. Not too much.
Because, I mean, most of the senators, if I would, I would dare say all of the senators have had children.
Sure.
And I would dare say that if their child, after behaving a certain way, kept taking cookies from the cookie jar, and then they came to their parents and said, I'm not going to take cookies from the cookie jar again.
Please fill it back up. I won't take any this time.
There you go. Would a parent believe the child? Would the parent give the child permission to go to that dance that he wanted to go? But they said, no, you can't go because you've been stealing cookies out of the cookie jar. Would you let the kid go to the dance, or would you say no?
It just doesn't make any sense that the senators seem to be, on both sides of the aisle, seem to be putting so much stock in what happens at a hearing and giving more weight to that than what the man has actually done. Now, he says is more important than what he's done? It really, in my opinion, does not matter what he says at the hearing. What really counts is what he has done as a judge, what he said in writing. That's the evidence that we have of his character, and what he says during the hearings really is irrelevant. And this is, of course, the swing vote. This is the O'Connor seat. This is the 5-4 vote. And if he is, as we all believe him to be based on the evidence, he is going to swing a lot of cases back the other direction, a lot of cases where O'Connor was on the winning side.
Well, doesn't the fact that we have everything, we have the media, we have the senators themselves, we have the administration, and the history that comes before all of them, making it sound like that it's the hearing that makes it's what he says at the hearing that decides everything, doesn't that give cover room to both sides of the aisle?
Well, of course it does, and perhaps that's why they all say it, is because it gives them all cover. But the question is, why would they want cover?
Mm-hmm.
What is it that they need cover from or for? Remember that this is a balance of powers that the executive branch and the legislative branch together choose the judicial branch. That's why it's a nomination by the president and confirmation, hearing and confirmation by the Senate, advice and consent, it's called. They are co-equal partners. There was never an intention in this balance of powers between the three branches that the executive branch would be all-powerful and the legislative branch would be a rubber stamp on whoever the president nominates. And I do think that the media has really been encouraging this idea that whoever the president names ought to be rubber stamped by the Senate. And that's not what the balance of powers is about. They have an obligation, and I don't think they're exercising that obligation.
Well, you hear that question all the time. It's don't you think that George Bush has a right to have the people he wants on the court? That's exactly the question that's asked.
That's exactly the question that's asked, and the answer is if you believe in the way that this country was established, if you believe in maintaining a proper balance of powers between the three branches of government, you have to accept, as the founders set it up, that the president and the Senate are co-equal partners in choosing that third branch. Otherwise, the whole balance of powers goes awry.
So the answer is, he has no right to this.
Certainly not. No. He has a right to nominate. That's his right. The Senate has a right to examine his nominee and decide whether that person is the right person for the job. If they decide it's not, then the president has to nominate a second person or a third person. As happened with Richard Nixon, who nominated a Clement Haynsworth, and who was rejected by the Senate. And then he nominated Harold Carswell, who was rejected by the Senate. And then he nominated Harry Blackmun, who served with great distinction for many years until just a few years ago.
So let's talk about some of the individual senators and where they are right now. Given what Alito has said about abortion and given the fact that we have, some would call her liberal, I don't know that I would use that word, but Olympia Snow, we do know that she is pro-choice.
Mm-hmm.
Where is she on Alito, given what Alito has written in his own hand?
You know, it's hard to say. We've been, we've been trying to find out where the last three remaining moderate Republicans in the Senate, hard to imagine because there used to be lots of moderate Republicans in the Senate, but Olympia Snow, Susan Collins, both of Maine, and Lincoln Chafee of Rhode Island, all three are pro-choice. All three are basically pro-women's rights, pro-minority rights, supportive of affirmative action. They tend to be fiscal conservatives, if you can call it that, but they on individual rights, they have traditionally vote with the Democrats on human rights issues. But they are under a lot of pressure from this administration. The level of arm twisting is extraordinary, especially if you look back at Roberts and you see how split the Democrats were and see that not a single Republican broke ranks on Roberts, despite serious, serious concerns that we know some of them had. They didn't break ranks, and the predictions are that we really can't count on any of those people to break ranks with the White House. That the White House has somehow managed to keep the Republican majority in the Senate in an extraordinary, really unprecedented level of lockstep. You never saw during all the years that the Democrats were in the majority in the Senate that kind of lockstep on really on any issue.
Mm.
Much less every issue. So I don't know what he's holding over their heads, but it's pretty powerful.
Pictures, videos, I don't know. I'm talking to the president of NOW, Kim Gandy. This is Liz Brown. We're talking about Judge Alito, Judge Samuel Alito, and whether or not he will be confirmed as the next person on the United States Supreme Court. We're going to take a break. We'll be back. Stay with us. Our number here is 454-0400. Our long distance number is 1-877-920-WGNU. You need to get up. You need to get to me. We have much, much, much to talk about. Stay with us.
St. Louis, 32 minutes after the hour of 8 o'clock at AM 920 WGNU. I'm Howard Morton with a look at the hour's traffic and weather. This hour's traffic is sponsored by Walmart. Westbound 270 at New Florissant, there's an accident. The exit ramp is partially blocked. Eastbound 70 at Cave Springs, there's an accident. It's been cleared. The traffic backs up approaching 370. Southbound Mason Road at Executive Parkway, there's an overturned vehicle. It's a couple of blocks south of Olive. Southbound traffic is being detoured into the northbound lane. Eastbound 44 at Bowles and Merrimack, no problems reported. Northbound 270 from 44 to Marshall, everything is on the move there. Westbound 40 between Big Bend and Hanley, look for slow traffic as well. Eastbound 40 between Brentwood and Hanley, look for slow traffic. Westbound Kingbridge traffic at Cleves Landing. Everything is returned back to normal. Westbound 5570 from Tudor all the way on to the PSB. Look for slow traffic. Hall Street at Adelaide. Look for those lights not working. Old Hulk Ferry. Between Dunn Road and Whisper Lake Drive, crews are widening the roadway there. That is a look at this hour's traffic. This hour's traffic has been sponsored by Walmart. For the coolest prices on the coolest stuff, come to Walmart. From the latest electronics to hottest toys, the most stylish home decor, Walmart is the place to bring all the home for holidays. Now taking a look at your WGNU forecast for today, tomorrow, and for Wednesday. Partly cloudy skies today, high in the upper 20s. This evening, partly cloudy with a low around 15. Tuesday, mostly cloudy with a high around 30. Tuesday evening, partly cloudy with a low around 10. And then on Wednesday, partly sunny, but the high will only be in the mid-20s. Currently at the studios of AM 920 WGNU, we have 21 degrees under clear skies. Lambert Field is reporting 21 and clear skies as well. Stay tuned for more of Liz Brown and the award-winning Wake Up Call. We'll take another look at your news, your traffic, and your weather in the 9 o'clock hour. I'm Howard Morton for AM 920 WGNU.
Congratulations to Liz Brown, winner of two 2005 Excellence in Communications Awards from the Greater St. Louis Association of Black Journalists. Best Talk Show for Danny Glover Talks Politics on the Morning Wake Up Call. And with Joe Garcia, Best Spot News for the Global News Update Series. When we call it the award-winning Wake Up Call, we're not kidding. From everyone at Radio Free St. Louis, AM 920 WGNU, congratulations to Liz Brown on an outstanding job.
Relax with an old friend. Janet Jimenez shares places and spaces with you at WGNU.net.
Ever hear of the Restore?
Yeah, where is it?
3763 Forest Park Avenue, east of Vandenbenner, west of Spring.
What's in the Restore?
It's an eclectic mix of new and used building materials.
Like cabinets, stoves, hardware?
Absolutely. Everything from windows and doors to the kitchen sink, and then some.
And your purchases benefit Habitat for Humanity St. Louis, right?
Yes, they do.
I gotta check this out. When's the Restore open?
Tuesday through Saturday, 9 to 4.
3763 Forest Park Avenue.
The Restore. Check it out.
This is Dr. Laura Schlesinger with a personal invitation for you to join me from 2 to 4 every Monday through Friday afternoon on WGNU. It is so great to be back in the St. Louis area, and I'm looking forward to talking with you here at Radio Free St. Louis about your personal, work, and family problems and issues. Dial 1-800-DR-LAURA, that's 1-800-DR-LAURA, and let's take on the day. Join me, Dr. Laura Schlesinger, 2 to 4 Monday through Friday afternoons on Radio Free St. Louis. AM 920 WGNU.
And we're back. Bob from Scranton, you're on the air.
Hi, Ted. Love the show. Long-time listener. First-time caller.
Thanks, Bob. Is there a special someone out there you'd like to talk about?
There is, Ted. I recently lost a very big part of my life.
You'd been together a long time?
Since college. This is for my belly, my paunch, my spare tire. I know we had some good times. God knows I'll never forget that night in Albuquerque with the burritos.
It's never easy to lose something that's been such a huge part of you, Bob. Where'd the magic go?
Well, I'd recently begun taking the stairs more and more instead of the elevator, and then we started seeing less and less of each other. One day, it was just gone.
Small step number 67. Take the stairs instead of the elevator or escalator. It's just one of the many small steps you can take to help you become a healthier, well, you. Get started at www.smallstep.gov and take a small step to get healthy.
The public service announcement brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
Next on Mondays at 9, a look at the strategy of the Iraq War. Pressure is mounting to begin a pullout, but have we really won anything yet? Secret interrogation locations, lack of precision munitions, covert news coverage sponsored by the military. Do we know exactly who it is we're fighting? Who established our policy? If we leave now, does this mean 2,000 Americans have died for nothing? An in-depth examination of our role in the fight against terrorism in Iraq with Carl Canetta, director of the Project on Defense Alternatives, and retired Colonel Douglas McGregor, defense policy expert and advisor to the Bush administration up to the start of the war, on the next edition of Mondays at 9. This is the award-winning Wake Up Call with Liz Brown. Don't leave home without it.
together with you. Outside the snow is falling and friends are calling you. Come on, it's lovely weather for a sleigh ride together with you. Giddy-yap, giddy-yap.
Welcome back to the Wake Up Call. This is Liz Brown, and I'm talking to the president of NOW this morning. I'm talking to Kim Gandy, and she is joining us from Washington, D.C. Kim, I want to get to a caller or two, if I might.
Sure.
Gary, you have a question for the president of NOW, Kim Gandy.
Yes, a comment that you made a while ago about the person not answering the questions, not getting the vote. What happens, I think, though, is if the Senate is stacked in the Senate, the person doesn't really have to answer the question. And I have to admit, we the people stack the deck in the Senate. We have the people in the Senate that we want right now to get this man through.
I think that you're right. The electorate elected a majority of Republicans to the Senate, but I think that a lot of people, when they cast their votes, didn't think about things like the senators being the deciding vote on who sits on the United States Supreme Court. It's one of the important parts about being a senator, but not something that often comes up when candidates are running for office. And I think that's our responsibility as an electorate to examine where those senatorial candidates are on things like the U.S. Supreme Court and whether they're willing to put people on the court who are opposed to basic rights that have formed the foundation of this country as we know it.
And with the exception, though, Kim, I would say of the community of African descent, that issue of the Supreme Court and their everlasting decisions is an issue that is brought to the black community almost every presidential election, and sometimes I think to the extent that telling black folks to overlook everything else about the Democrat, except to know that at least we'll have that vote on Supreme Court judges.
Well, and this is a conversation that we've been having a lot recently because I've heard a lot of people say, "Hey, I've held my nose a few times and voted for Democrats on the basis that, well, after all, it's the Supreme Court, stupid."
Exactly.
And guess what? Here we are with the fifth vote. They've already confirmed Roberts. We are looking at the fifth vote on so many things that we've spent the last 30 years achieving in terms of equality and equal treatment in this country. And now the Democrats are getting wishy-washy on us after, holding this out as the Holy Grail, if you will, for all these years.
It's a guarantee. It's like, and again, I will emphasize that in the black community, I've heard so many black people say, call up on this show and say, when I was advocating, we need to hold Kerry accountable. But Liz, it's the vote on the Supreme Court. It's the vote on the Supreme Court. We have to choose a lesser of two evils. Well, you're still choosing evil.
Well, of course, in terms of the presidential, there's no question that Kerry would have nominated very different people from the people George Bush is nominating. Now, the question is, would the Democrats even take it seriously? Bill Clinton didn't
do us any favors.
Supreme Court seriously.
He didn't do us any favors.
We've ended up okay with Steve Breyer is fine, Ruth Bader Ginsburg is fine, but everybody that Clinton named, if there was the tiniest little pushback from the Republicans, he would pull the name back. Peter Edelman, the husband of Marion Wright Edelman, very, very distinguished lawyer and scholar, was nominated for the D.C. Circuit by Clinton, and a few Republicans pushed back. They weren't anywhere close to a hearing. He pulled the name right away.
Well, we've
just
all
pulled it. Didn't stand up 5 minutes.
Asked Lonnie Guinier if she thought that he would stand
here,
by.
Here. Exactly.
Exactly.
And Lonnie Guinier and Peter Edelman were both, involved in the Clinton's wedding. I mean, these are
right.
People that he had known for years
his
and years,
friends.
And that he knew what good people they were, and he knew what good, solid judges they would make, and he didn't stand by them. I just saw this AP article from last week that the first sentence of the story about Alito says, "So far this year, the civil rights and women's rights groups opposed to President Bush's conservative court nominees have been rebuffed, rebuked, and rejected.
and that's just by Senate Democrats.
Mm. Well, then that begs the question, where are the Democrats? Are the Democrats lockstep on Alito like the Republicans appear to be?
Not a chance. But they need to be. And I think that's, again, this is a defining moment, I think, for the Democratic Party. This is the fifth vote on the Supreme Court. This is the next 30 years. I mean, this is my two daughters' adulthood ahead of them. And if the Democrats cannot stand together to oppose this nominee and to do what is needed to do to reject this nominee, as previous Senates rejected Haynesworth and Carswell and Bork, and he is definitely in that company, if they don't reject him, then as far as I'm concerned, they can't count on any of our votes. And we need to be putting candidates up against every one of them.
Do any of the United States senators even raise the issue of how white male the Supreme Court is going to be with Alito? Does anybody even talk about that?
Well, it was pretty white male to begin with.
Right.
6 out of 9. This brings us to 7 out of 9.
Yeah.
Well, the other thing that's not talked about very much is this would give the Supreme Court a Catholic majority, a religious Catholic majority of 5 votes, all of them anti-choice.
And why isn't anybody raising that issue?
I don't know. Well, partly because people have responded to the fact that the right wing runs a religion-based campaign. I remember that in the case of Roberts, who was also Catholic, as is Alito, that if you opposed Roberts, then you were therefore anti-Catholic or anti-religion, or that you were holding his religion against him or something to that effect.
And I expect to hear that some Democrat out there, some woman out there, some Democrat senator out there is going to raise any of those issues, and we're not hearing that from any of them.
Well, I think that some of them will. I think Barbara Boxer will raise it. I think Ted Kennedy will raise it. I think that
How about Hillary, who wants to be president and I'm pro-war?
I think we're waiting to see what Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama do.
We need to take another break. And Kim, when I come back, I'd love to talk about Alito and this group, this Princeton group that he joined.
Oh, yes.
Let's talk about that when we come back. I'm talking to the president of NOW, Kim Gandy. She's joining us from Washington, D.C., and we're talking about Judge Samuel Alito. I'm Liz Brown. Wake up call. Stay with us.
Beautiful sight, we're happy tonight, walking in a winter wonderland.
Radio Free St. Louis, AM 920, WGNU.
This is your wake-up call global news update. Dateline Montreal. Walmart is denying a report by the CBC that says it hired security personnel to spy on employees who supported an effort to unionize a store in Quebec. Walmart shut down that store in question in April of this year, shortly after 200 workers there got accreditation to go union, but before they could get to a collective bargaining position. The report says the undercover security people patrolled the store in plain clothes, keeping tabs on the union people and workers who were sympathetic to the unionizing effort. Surveillance cameras in the store were also used to keep tabs on them. Walmart says the store was shut down because of financial considerations. And Dateline New York. A new study by the National Security Agency concludes that intelligence information regarding the Gulf of Tonkin incident in 1964 that led America into a decade of combat in Vietnam was manipulated by intelligence officers and passed on to government officials. Most of the information from North Vietnam was intercepted by American intelligence sources pertaining to the Gulf of Tonkin attack was never included in the report sent back to Washington. Based on what was reported back, President Johnson ordered airstrikes on North Vietnam, and Congress followed up with a broad resolution that called for military action there. This is your wake-up call global news update.
Now that Medicare finally has prescription drug benefits,
What does it mean for you? I'm Senator Bob Dole, and on January 1st, 2006, all Medicare beneficiaries, regardless of income, will have drug coverage. Explore your options now so you can take full advantage of this program. Enrollment begins November 15th. Call 1-800-MEDICARE or visit www.medicare.gov to get all the facts.
This message is endorsed by Easter Seals, providing services for children and adults with disabilities.
Congratulations to Liz Brown, winner of two 2005 Excellence in Communications Awards from the Greater St. Louis Association of Black Journalists. Best Talk Show for Danny Glover Talks Politics on the Morning Wake Up Call, and with Joe Garcia, Best Spot News for the Global News Update Series. When we call it the award-winning Wake Up Call, we're not kidding. From everyone at Radio Free St. Louis, AM 920 WGNU, congratulations to Liz Brown on an outstanding job.
Diabetes is a killer. After I was diagnosed, I had no pain. I didn't feel sick, so I didn't listen to my doctor. Then it struck. I had a heart attack, then a stroke, and I was only 49. If only I'd known. If only I'd listened.
The complications of diabetes often go undiagnosed and are far more serious than you might think. Most people with diabetes also have high blood pressure and cholesterol, which can cause severe heart damage. In fact, 2 out of 3 people with diabetes die from heart disease or stroke. But you can reduce your risk of heart disease and stroke by lowering your blood sugar, blood pressure, and cholesterol. Learn how. Call 1-800-DIABETES for your free diabetes survival guide. Choose to live.
It's not too late. Don't let diabetes destroy your life.
Next on Mondays at 9, a look at the strategy of the Iraq War. Pressure is mounting to begin a pullout, but have we really won anything yet? Secret interrogation locations, lack of precision munitions, covert news coverage sponsored by the military. Do we know exactly who it is we're fighting? Who established our policy? If we leave now, does this mean 2,000 Americans have died for nothing? An in-depth examination of our role in the fight against terrorism in Iraq with Carl Canetta, Director of the Project on Defense Alternatives, and retired Colonel Douglas McGregor, defense policy expert and advisor to the Bush administration up to the start of the war, on the next edition of Mondays at 9.
Around the world, around the world, and behind the story. Behind the story. It's the award-winning Wake-Up Call. Wake-Up Call. Liz Brown. Liz Brown.
Welcome back to the Wake Up Call. This is Liz Brown, living my life as an African and loving it. 454-0400 is my phone number. 454-6609 is my fax. My toll-free long-distance number is 1-877-920-WGNU. And don't forget, we broadcast live on the World Wide Web at www.wgnu.net. From Xenia to Zimbabwe, we are live. And my guest this morning, and in the issue that we're talking about this morning, is the nomination of Judge Samuel Alito. And my guest this morning is the president of NOW, Kim Gandy. Kim, welcome back. 454-0400 is my phone number. 454-6609 is my fax. Kim, welcome back. It's good to have you back. Kim, are you there? Have we lost her? Okay, we've lost her. My number here is 454-0400, and my toll-free long distance is 1-877-920-WGNU. We've had some technical difficulties here, but we will get the president of NOW back on the line with us. I want to point out, if I can, this article that came out of Slate about the issue of Alito, and they're saying that there is no honesty about the abortion debate going on about Alito. And we have the president of NOW, Kim, welcome back.
Thank you. Sorry we got disconnected.
That's okay. Slate is saying that there is no honesty in the debate about Roe. I'd love to have the debate about, or the discussion about, the Princeton group that Alito was part of. Can you tell us about that?
Well, it's a group called Concerned Alumni of Princeton, and it was a pretty radical group. It was formed in the wake of Princeton's decision to admit women and to require that a certain number of racial minorities be admitted to Princeton. It was 11% black and Hispanic was the goal of the university in terms of representation, which I'm sure you'll agree is a very modest representation, and they opened the doors to women. And this was basically a group of white men who were very angry that the university had started opening its doors. And so they formed this organization called Concerned Alumni of Princeton that put out some pretty outrageous materials. I mean, even to the extent that within a couple of years after it formed, in fact, at the time that Alito was a member of the group,
No, wait a minute. Did they?
Bill Frist was distancing. Bill Frist, who's a Princeton alum, the Senate majority leader, very close to George Bush, even Bill Frist was distancing himself from the statements of this group. Imagine.
Imagine that. But here's the point I'd like to make, Kim. Did Samuel Alito, did they kidnap him and put drugs in him and make him join this organization, or is this something that, as most organizations are, you make a decision to be a part of or not?
Well, and not only did he join the organization in the 70s, just after he was out of Princeton, he was a relatively new alum at the time, he not only joined it, but 10 years later, in that famous 1985 application to be a part of the Reagan administration, when on the application, they asked him to provide information about his, quote, philosophical commitment to administration policies, and he listed his membership
as evidence
of his philosophical commitment to the Reagan administration's policies. He specifically listed it. 10 years later, he's bragging on it.
Bragging on it and using it as the evidence and the proof. Am I down with you? Well, let me tell you what I was part of.
That's
wow.
Right.
Wow.
Let me show you how much I'm there with you.
10 years, and this is 10 years afterwards.
Yeah, 1985.
Because we're not talking about, we don't have to go back to the 1800s or even the 1950s to get this troglodyte type of mentality. This is in the 70s, this is in the 80s, and for all practical purposes, why should we think it's any different now than it was then?
There is absolutely no reason at all to think that it's any different. In fact, in looking at his opinions, his attitude towards race and sex discrimination was truly, truly outrageous.
And do we have the Senate Democrats latching on to just this one thing?
Well, you know, some of them are. It's not that they're not talking about it. It's that they're not making any commitment about what they're going to do with it.
And the
Democrats are saying, well, we're very concerned about this. We have deep concerns. We have grave concerns.
Why aren't they just saying no, like the Republicans
exactly
are saying?
Just say no.
Just say no. The Republicans are saying yes. Why aren't they saying no?
Why aren't the Republicans having any concerns about this? I mean, the Republicans, I don't like a lot of what the Republican Party is doing these days, but there are human beings representing the Republican Party in the United States Senate. How can they not be themselves saying, you know, I'm worried about this. This guy seems to be way outside the norm of American society, way outside
the mainstream. Yet,
well, the scary,
not one Republican has said such a thing.
Well, the scary answer is that they don't see him as way outside the norm.
Well, they see him outside the norm of the American mainstream. They would have to. But they don't see him outside the norm of what they'd like to see on the Supreme Court. That's the sad part.
When are the hearings coming up, Kim?
Early January, the hearings will be starting, and we are going to be organizing activists to come to Washington, D.C. to lobby and make phone calls and help us really organize around the key senators that we need to turn this fight around.
And who are the senators that people need to be focusing on?
Well, all of the Democrats are critical, and any of the Republicans that that we think have a spine or a conscience, which, you know, either test will do, but it's still a minority.
Mm. Kim Gandy, president of NOW, thank you so much for joining us on the Wake Up Call. Always a pleasure.
Always great, Liz. Thanks.
Take care. Happy holidays.
You too.
Listen, folks, Liz Brown, the Wake Up Call, Mondays at 9. That's what's happening after the break, and we'll be talking about pulling out of Iraq with Carl Canetta and others. Stay with us.
Think of all the fun I've missed. Think of all the fellas that I haven't kissed. Next year I could be just as good if you check off my Christmas list. Santa baby.
WGNU, Granite City, St. Louis. 920 on your AM dial.
Here's the latest from ABC News. I'm Joan Bennett. Former members of the 9/11 Commission issue a report card today for the government's response to its security recommendations. More F's than A's, says ABC's Jim Hickey.
Former 9/11 Commission members complain federal anti-terror dollars are being improperly allocated. White House counsel Dan Bartlett blames Congress.
We think it's important that Homeland Security dollars go to where the threats are, and that's something we'll constantly be pushing the Congress to change.
The former commissioners also say local first responders still do not have radios to properly communicate in emergencies. Bartlett says progress is being made in some cities.
Other cities in America need to pick up the pace.
Bartlett says the White House, Congress, everyone needs to do more. Jim Hickey, ABC News.
Sparks flew as Saddam Hussein's trial resumed today in Baghdad. ABC's Aaron Katursky in Baghdad.
The session began dramatically. Saddam's lawyers walked out of court in protest of trial procedure. When they returned, they launched into a lengthy challenge to the court's authority and questioned the security provided to the participants. The defense is trying to get Saddam out of this court and into an international court, but the case is moving ahead, and for the first time, a witness is testifying in person.
Before leaving on a trip to Europe, Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice wouldn't say if there are secret CIA prisons in European democracies, but she did say,
"The United States does not transport and has not transported detainees from one country to another for the purpose of interrogation using torture."
The issue of torture has strained relations between the U.S. and European allies. A vigil outside California's San Quentin prison for convicted killer Stanley Tookie Williams, who's scheduled to die December 13th. Hollywood celebs, including Jamie Foxx, asking the governor to spare Williams' life, saying the former gang leader is now a positive influence on kids. This is ABC News.
Dear Gold Bond, I'm a nurse, and washing my hands all day makes my skin raw.
Here's a real letter from Victoria of Connecticut about our ultimate healing lotion.
What a wonderful product. I feel it working even after I've washed my hands.
Goldbind Ultimate Healing Lotion penetrates fast to help heal rough, cracked skin with 7 intensive moisturizers plus 3 vitamins. It's long-lasting, too.
It works better than any lotion I've ever used.
Can your lotion do that? Goldbind Ultimate Healing Lotion.
This stuff really works.
Get the good stuff.
Looking for the perfect holiday gift for the home handyman or handywoman? Check out Napa's 38-piece homeowner tool set. It features a gear driver soft grip ratcheting screwdriver with interchangeable shafts to help you tackle any job fast. This set also includes sockets, an adjustable wrench, hammer, tape measure, level, nails, screws, picture hangers, and more. Plus a high-quality wide-mount tool bag, all for just $49.99.
Get the good stuff.
Napa. Get the good stuff.
A mixture of shock and awe as TV Guide and TV Land team up to present the 100 most unexpected TV moments all this week. A preview from ABC News entertainment correspondent Bill Deal.
1992 on Saturday Night Live, Mike Myers' Coffee Talk host is Linda Richman. Worship Barbara Streisand is chatting with Madonna and Roseanne.
The movie was like butter.
Like butter.
Like a big stick of butter.
Suddenly, Streisand herself pays a surprise visit.
All this talk about food, I'm getting hungry, girl.
How about William Hung's American Idol appearance?
Cheap bass! Cheap bass!
Thank
I'm
you.
Wasted by the weight!
How can we forget the Dean scream?
We're going to California!
The 100 most unexpected TV moments starts tonight on TV Land, with the countdown continuing each night this week. Bill Deal, ABC News.
Money Scope, the Dow's off 26, NASDAQ down 7 points. Joan Bennett, ABC News.
With a report of WGNU News, I'm Peyton Colston. This report is brought to you by Gold's Gym. In the news, schools across the state of Missouri are not faring so well, according to the latest annual performance report. Jim Morris, a spokesperson for the Missouri Department of Elementary and Secondary Education, says among the things the report reveals is that the state's dropout rate is up 0.4% from last year,
after declining pretty steadily for several years. So I don't know whether this is a turnaround in that trend, and if it is, that's a problem, or whether it's a one-year blip.
In addition to the number of high school dropouts increasing, the report indicates there is an increase in overall spending and a decrease in the overall number of students, as well as the number of high school graduates going to college. The good news is that the state's ACT scores have gone up. In other news, St. Louis County Police are investigating a fatal shooting involving an off-duty Berkeley police officer. Shortly before 7 o'clock yesterday morning, the off-duty officer, who was still in full uniform, stopped to check on a building he owns in Normandy because of some recent burglary and vandalism there. The Berkeley officer tells investigators a man in the building charged the officer while carrying an unknown object. The officer fired one shot, killing the man. No names are being released in that incident. Police are still looking for suspects in a murder in Castle Point in North St. Louis County. Around 7:30 Friday morning, a passerby found the body of 41-year-old Ronnie White between two houses in the 10,200 block of Duke. White had been shot multiple times. No arrests have been made. The Highland, Illinois woman faces charges in a crash that killed a Collinsville man last week. 21-year-old Tiffany Smiley is charged with reckless homicide and aggravated drunken driving. 19-year-old Travis Stewart was a passenger in Smiley's car early Friday morning when Smiley allegedly ran a stop sign and became wedged under a tractor trailer on Route 4 in Marine Township. Stewart was pronounced dead at a local hospital. Smiley and another passenger were airlifted to other area hospitals. And finally, state and local officials are working to make sure a recent report in the Wall Street Journal about the future of the Hazelwood Ford plant does not come true. Hazelwood Mayor T.R. Carr says a major problem with closing the plant is that it won't affect only the city of Hazelwood.
We're a city of 26,000, but some 20,000 plus individuals come to Hazelwood to work every day. We are an industrial center for the region. Anytime you lose a major employer such as this, it'll have an impact not just on the city of Hazelwood, but on the region as a whole.
The report in the Wall Street Journal indicates that Ford is closing 5 plants, including the one in Hazelwood, due to sagging sales. Complete details of Ford's restructuring plans are not expected to be released until after the first of the year. And that's a check of WGNU News brought to you by Gold's Gym. Gold's Gym, the leader in fitness for 40 years, is celebrating with free enrollment. But hurry, offer ends soon. Call 1-800-99-GOLDS or visit goldsgym.com today. I'm Peyton Colston with WGNU News.
Good morning, St. Louis. 7 minutes after the hour of 9 o'clock at AM 920 WGNU. I'm Howard Morton with a look at this hour's traffic and weather. This hour's traffic is sponsored by McDonald's Restaurants. Northbound 55 at Bayless and 44, no problems to report. Eastbound 44 from Mraz Overpass all the way into Lindbergh looks good. Northbound 270 at 44, everything's running smoothly. Westbound 255 at Coke and 55, no problems there. Westbound 40 between Big Bend and Hanley, everything is on the move there. Eastbound 40 between Brentwood and Hanley, you've got slow traffic still this hour. In both directions, 270 at Chain of Rocks Bridge and Canal Bridge, look for maintenance operations, having some tie-ups there. Westbound 5570 at the Poplar Street Bridge. That traffic's finally easing. Westbound Kingbridge traffic at Cleve's Landing looks good. Hall Street at Adelaide, there's a report of lights not working this hour. Southbound Mason and Executive Parkway, they expect delays due to an earlier accident. And the Broadway ramp to westbound 40 is closed for maintenance work. That is a look at this hour's traffic. This hour's traffic has been sponsored by McDonald's Restaurants. Relive all the great Busch Stadium moments on one DVD. The official Busch Stadium Tribute DVD, produced by the Cardinals, is on sale for a limited time only at Redbox locations in McDonald's. Now, taking a look at your WGNU forecast for today, tomorrow, and Wednesday. Partly cloudy skies today, high in the upper 20s. This evening, partly cloudy with a low around 15. Tuesday, mostly cloudy with a high near 30. Tuesday evening, partly cloudy with a low around 10. And then on Wednesday, partly sunny skies, but it's deceiving because it will only be 20 degrees outside. Currently at the studios of AM 920 WGNU, under partly sunny skies, we have a balmy 20 degrees. Lambert Field is reporting 20 degrees and some clouds in the air as well. Stay tuned for more of Liz Brown and the award-winning Wake-Up Call. It's Mondays at 9. That's up next. We'll take another look at your news and your weather in the 10 o'clock hour. I'm Howard Morton for AM 920 WGNU.
Boom, 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 boom.
Santa baby, just slip a sable under the tree for me. Been an awful good girl, Santa baby, so hurry down the chimney tonight. Santa baby, a 54 convertible to light blue. I'll wait up for you, dear Santa baby, so hurry down the chimney tonight. Think of all the fun I've missed. Think of all the fellas that I haven't kissed. Next year I could be just as good if you check off my Christmas list. Santa baby, I want a yacht, and really that's not a lot. Been an angel all year, Santa baby, so hurry down the chimney tonight. Santa honey, one little thing I really need, the deed to a platinum mine, Santa baby, so hurry down the chimney tonight. Santa cutie, and fill my stocking with a duplex and checks. Sign your X on the line, Santa cutie, and hurry down the chimney tonight. Come and trim my Christmas tree with some decorations bought at Tiffany. I really do believe in you. Let's see if you believe in me. Santa baby, forgot to mention one little thing, a ring. I don't mean on the phone, Santa baby.
This is Mondays at 9 with Liz Brown, where we take a closer look at issues and people shaping our world and how they affect us. Once again, here's Liz Brown.
Welcome to Mondays at 9, and our discussion today is, Iraq. I was watching the Sunday morning talk fest And on the Meet the Press, we had a senator coming on to talk about, Senator McCain coming on to talk about his position on Iraq and whether we should be in or whether we should be out of Iraq. And we need to talk about where we are in Iraq. Can we pull out of Iraq? Should we pull out of Iraq? How we pull out of Iraq? We're going to talk about that this morning on Mondays at 9 with our guest, Carl Canetta, co-director of the Project on Defense Alternatives, joining us from Washington, D.C. Carl, good morning.
Morning.
How are you?
Very good.
Very good. And we also have joining us from Ashburn, Virginia, Colonel Douglas McGregor, former Army colonel and decorated combat veteran in Desert Storm, joining us again from Ashburn, Virginia. Colonel, good morning.
Good morning.
How are you?
Fine, thanks.
Our number here is 454-0400, 454-6609. And, Colonel, I'd like to start with you, because in the midst of all of this discussion about what we should do about Iraq, the voices that whether we should be in Iraq and whether we should be out of Iraq, there doesn't seem to be a lot of voices out there of active military people speaking on this issue. There's a dilemma there, isn't there? And if there's a dilemma, can we really take what they're saying about what should be done as Iraq honestly, since they have to stand next to the president?
Well, I think you hit on something that's very important. When you talk about active military, you're talking specifically about the 3- and 4-star generals.
Mm-hmm.
And most of these men owe their positions and promotions to Secretary Rumsfeld and the president. And they are behaving right now as props for the administration's policies, which is unfortunate. And as a result, you get, I think, a very misleading picture of the events on the ground in Iraq. In fact, I think it's very hard for most Americans today to get a true picture one way or the other. And that's one of our challenges. I don't think the media are able to provide, quite frankly, the picture that Americans need. Most of the people in Iraq today are living under practically house arrest inside secure areas. Don't see much of the country, and certainly don't see a true picture very much anymore.
Well, can you give us a historical perspective, Colonel? Are the 3-star, 4-star generals acting any differently than they did in World War II, World War I? Is it different today?
Yes.
How so?
I would tell you that the situation in terms of civil-military relations is very different and has been since the early 1960s. If you go back through American military history, we've had examples of politicized senior officers. Most of the time, they didn't last. The most famous, of course, is George McClellan, who ultimately ended up running for president against President Lincoln and losing. But in most cases, we begin our wars with inadequate military leadership, and the political leadership that is committed to success ends up retiring rather quickly most of the generals that are running the show at the outset of every war. It's an unfortunate set of circumstances because it speaks to the lack of interest in a professional military establishment that is historic in this country. But the good news is that at the outset of World War I and again at the outset of World War II and indeed throughout the wars, general officers were expected to be successful. They were held responsible. This continued under Harry Truman in Korea. This did not happen under Lyndon Johnson and Robert McNamara in Vietnam, and it has not happened in the current ongoing war in either Afghanistan or Iraq. Instead, what you've gotten, I think, is a situation today that is very similar to what emerged in the 1960s, where there is an unhealthy relationship between the people that are running the show and the executive branch and the generals that have been promoted, largely because the generals will go along, raise no objections, question nothing, and say essentially whatever their political superiors want them to.
Do you think the American public gets that?
Well, you might be a better judge of that than I am. You talk to more Americans probably across the country than I do. It's hard to tell. I think most Americans want to think positively about people in uniform. And I get the impression that many Americans have difficulty distinguishing between the soldiers, sergeants, lieutenants, and captains and Marines at the lowest levels who inevitably try to do the best job they possibly can under often really terrible circumstances from the generals at the top who are preeminently concerned about their own career advancement. In fact, there was an article that came out very recently by Seymour Hersh, and he states categorically that the generals are all thinking primarily of their own careers and, as a result, are keeping silent on a whole range of issues.
Well, yeah. How long have you been retired, Colonel?
I've been out about a year and almost 14 months.
How do you assess the morale of the military? Where are the soldiers? What is their morale like? And what are is that of the officers?
Well, I think, first of all, you've got to understand that the soldiers that are serving today on the ground in Iraq are in a situation similar to the 1960s, but it's in some respects it's a little better. In contrast to the way we ran things during the Vietnam War, we have sent units in their entirety to Iraq. And so the soldiers develop very quickly a close relationship with each other, and they are committed preeminently in an environment where it's very difficult for them sometimes to see any evidence for a plan or any evidence for what I would call a true mission focus. They hang together very closely. They're committed to each other, and they're committed first and foremost to coming home together and alive. So in that sense, I think morale is probably pretty good. In fact, the evidence that I get in the discussions that I have with people that I know on the ground over there, they tell me American soldiers are there to make the best of a bad situation. And as I say, come home alive. Now, you know, beyond that, what do American soldiers think? I don't think that they are focused very much on the debate here in the United States at all. I think they're focused on surviving and coming back.
And let's talk about the debate here in the United States. Carl Canetta, break it down for us. What is the debate with regard to the exit strategy for Iraq?
Well, John Murtha's recent proposal to withdraw in a period of 6 months has really sparked a renewed debate here. There is a division between those who agree that we should set the timeline, that the idea of withdrawing within 6 months and supporting Iraqi security forces from outside the country is the way to go. And some Democratic leaders have backed up John Murtha on that. The administration's point of view is that we are there for the long haul. They are now saying, as they do about every 6 months, that within 2 years, it's always 2 years, we will have a very significant reduction. And they're looking or saying that by the end of 2007, we should have significantly fewer than 100,000. So the administration refuses to say this is a timeline. It is contingent on a number of milestones that need to be set inside the country. So really the administration's point of view is that we're there for the long haul. However long it takes is how long it's going to take. They are putting out this two-year view, but they're not saying that we're out at the end of that 2 years. The other poll that is the Democratic poll, or at least the one put forward by John Murtha and is supported by the House leadership of the Democrats, is that we can look at 6 months and continue to support Iraqis principally through air power and with some sort of rapid reaction forces in the region. So in case something goes badly, we can jump back in. That's the debate inside of government. What we see in public opinion polls is that support for the administration's handling of the war has really collapsed. We have 63% of the public saying that we should return all or most of U.S. troops within a year. So it seems to me that Murtha's plan is more within that range, whereas the administration is looking looking farther into the future.
And, Colonel, one of the things that we're hearing from the administration is that we can't let the terrorists win, that we have to win this fight. How would you define winning? How do you define winning in Iraq now? And then secondly, you can define winning in a wartime situation, and can we define a winning situation here?
Well, listen, those are the critical questions. First of all, I think leaving Iraq is victory at this point for the American people. We're spending somewhere as close to about $400 billion in Iraq, which is, quite frankly, incomprehensible. The notion that we should invest $400 billion in that country, a country with no middle class, no cultural foundation for the rule of law whatsoever, a society that has been traumatized from years of brutal dictatorship and expecting it to transform into some sort of Anglo-Saxon-style democracy is crazy. And that's why the real problem in Iraq from the very outset has been with the occupation. I don't think most Americans understand right now that it doesn't make a great deal of sense to really speak any longer of Iraq. Iraq effectively consists of three separate distinct states today. In the south, you have an emerging Islamic Republic on the Iranian model. In the center, you have what most people would characterize as simply a failed state consisting mostly of Sunni Muslim Arabs who are adamantly opposed, obviously, to our occupation. And then in the north, you have Kurdistan, the Kurdish areas that are autonomous and effectively have been independent for several years, thanks to our intervention years ago with the use of air power and Army Special Forces that went in there and built up the Kurdish Defense Forces. So you've got three separate distinct states. You don't have a unitary state called Iraq. And most people in that country today are much more concerned about their local and tribal affiliations, religious and ethnic origins that have nothing to do with this artificial construct called Iraq. That's something that Americans don't understand. The second part is that there is this supposition that somehow or another we are in control of events on the ground in Iraq. Mm. I don't think we're in control, and I don't think we have been for well over a year now. I think events there have outpaced us, and the people that live in that country will ultimately determine that nation's destiny, if you even want to dignify it with the word nation anymore. We're not able to do that, and I think General Casey made that very clear when he came back and testified before Congress in October, saying that the American military presence in that country feeds the occupation, which is hated by everyone who is an Arab in that country and throughout the entire region, and actually extends the amount of time that it will take for so-called Iraqi security forces to become self-reliant.
And one of the things, Carl, that this administration, another thing that this administration also points to as proof of success, and also uses as a measuring tool, the elections in Iraq. How effective are they to use as a measurement? Because now this administration is saying, well, let's wait to December when we have elections. Is that a good a measurement?
Well, you know, what we've seen in the past year are a couple of elections have already been conducted there. The first one in January and then the referendum. So every time you turn around in Iraq, there's now an election. And what we haven't seen, however, is that translate into a stability for the country. It has not pulled the plug on the insurgency. Instead, the insurgency has grown over the course of the past year. And we continue to lose people at about the same rate as we did prior to the election. So in the short term, elections are certainly not a magic bullet. The way the elections were conducted were guaranteed to alienate a good piece of the population there. The Sunni area, which is the base of the insurgency, they are not the only insurgents, but today it is the foundation of the insurgency. You had a lot of opposition to going forward with the elections there because among mainstream Sunnis, because the security situation undercut their ability to mobilize voters. So they felt, correctly, that they were put at a terrible disadvantage. So many boycotted the elections. Some felt the same way about the referendum and going into this next set of elections. You also have conditions that limit the ability of Sunnis to fully participate. So where elections are supposed to convince the Iraqis that we are handing the government over to them, in fact, the most important segment from the point of view of the insurgency feel alienated from the elections and don't feel prepared to conduct them. So they see the elections as a way of locking them out of government. So elections on the surface are not the solution. One final problem there is that we have, in a sense, at least as far as the media can see, handed the steering wheel over to the Iraqis, but the steering wheel doesn't attach to anything. The capacity of the Iraqi government to actually run the country is illusory. The United States continues to be the principal force inside the country, and that feeds the attitude on the ground that many people want us to simply go. You mentioned the poll that was conducted by the British military, which showed that something on the order of 80 to 85% of Iraqis oppose the occupation and want to see it end. And in fact, something on the order of 45% actually support attacks on U.S. and British troops. That's an awful large percentage who are essentially of a single mind with the insurgency.
And, Colonel, let me get to you quickly let me go ahead and take a break, and then I want to get back to you about the situation of the Iraqi people, how they are existing during this war. We're going to take a break, folks. My name is Liz Brown. This is Mondays at 9. I am talking to the co-director of the Project on Defense Alternatives, Carl Canetta. He's joining us from Washington, D.C., and Colonel Douglas McGregor, a former Army colonel and a decorated combat veteran in Desert Storm. He's joining us from Ashburn, Virginia. I'm Liz Brown. Stay with us.
Autumn leaves are falling, and winter time is near. It's getting very close to that special time of year. The snow will be the whitest. Stars will shine their brightest. Bells will ring out merry.
Radio Free St. Louis, AM 920, WGNU.
Every weekend, your gospel voice of choice can be found on the World Wide Web at WGNU.net.
You want your preschooler to be ready for school. Trinity Tabernacle Child Development Center is ready to help you prepare your preschooler not only for school, but also for life. Trinity Tabernacle Child Development Center is an outreach of Trinity Tabernacle, Assembly of God in Bridgeton. Your child, age 2 to 4, receives a non-denominational Bible curriculum with Bible stories, songs, arts and crafts, plus lessons in numbers, science, arts, and phonics to help prepare him or her for kindergarten. Your child will also grow personally, socially, educationally, and spiritually every day as a unique individual created by God. Call Christine at 314-291-8839 to learn more about Trinity Tabernacle Child Development Center and to register your child. Open Monday through Friday from 6:30 a.m. to 6 p.m. Trinity Tabernacle Child Development Center, 11950 Mark Twain Drive in Bridgeton, 314-291-8839. Serving the community since 1979.
Need to get it off your chest? 314-454-0400. 1-877-920-WGNU. Radio Free St. Louis, AM 920 WGNU. The cure for the common cause.
Scientists and doctors are agreeing more and more that diet can determine whether a person lives a long, healthy life or a life full of unnecessary disease and even death.
I have diabetes, and after gradually changing my diet and getting more exercise, I've noticed my sugar level has become stable and my feet don't swell as much.
My blood pressure has been high for 3 years.
Once I stopped eating salt and slowed down on eating oily foods, my blood pressure has gotten back to normal.
It seems like I gained weight just by looking at food. But now that I had the knowledge and most importantly the discipline to make conscious healthy choices, my whole life has changed.
Obesity, diabetes, and heart disease cause millions of deaths each year. Every 45 seconds, someone in America suffers from a stroke. Join the battle against these controllable and preventable diseases. Listen to Healthy Alternatives.
Create a healthy future today.
All of us at Radio Free St. Louis congratulate Joe Garcia, who produces the Wake Up Call Global News Update. Winner of the 2005 Award for Best Spot News from the Greater St. Louis Association of Black Journalists, Joe's talent and hard work have contributed to our programming for many years and helps to make our morning program the award-winning Wake Up Call with Liz Brown. Once again, congratulations to Joe Garcia from everyone at Radio Free St. Louis, AM 920 WGNU.
Real life on the cutting edge. It's the award-winning Wake Up Call with Liz Brown. This is Mondays at 9 with Liz Brown, where we take a closer look at issues and people shaping our world. Once again, here's Liz Brown.
Welcome back. Welcome back. I am talking to retired Colonel Douglas McGregor, a decorated combat veteran in Desert Storm. He's joining us from Ashburn, Virginia, and Carl Canetta, co-director of the Project on Defense Alternatives, joining us from Washington, D.C. And we're talking about Iraq. Should we stay? Should we go? And how do we do that? Colonel, you talked a little bit earlier about how the people of Iraqi during this, or the people of Iraq are during this war, are basically under house arrest. What do you think would surprise most Americans if they knew exactly how the Iraqi people are living?
Well, first of all, I think they would be surprised to discover that 90% of the population of Iraq, thanks to many, many years of sanctions after the Gulf War, live in a state of abject poverty, worse than most Americans could even begin to comprehend. There is no middle class in that country. The middle class was destroyed over the last 12, 13 years by sanctions. And imagine the consequences of having large fortresses filled with American troops that have lavish facilities and Motel 6 accommodations being built in close proximity to Iraqi neighborhoods filled with thousands upon thousands of Arabs living in abject poverty. You can imagine that the resentment, bitterness, anger, and frustration amongst the Arabs are pretty spectacular. So in that sense, the population of central Iraq has suffered terribly. The occupation itself has been handled very badly by the American generals. And it's always interesting to me that there's been no critical appraisal of those responsible for running the occupation. We have killed, wounded, or incarcerated hundreds of thousands of Sunni Muslim Arabs, and in some case, Shiite Arabs. And in that part of the world, in doing so, we've created millions of enemies. This is part of the problem that General Casey, when he took over in November of 2004, faced when he arrived, that the opportunity to so-called supposedly win hearts and minds had actually been lost dramatically during the first 12 to 18 months of the occupation. We went in, and essentially the generals treated, and when I say generals, I'm talking about the army generals, treated as a matter of policy any Arab that was opposed to the presence of American armed forces in his country as a terrorist. And now what we've seen over the last several months has been an attempt to move away from that, recognizing that 90% of the people that we have been fighting are simply people that wanted us out of their country. They have nothing to do with Al-Qaeda, nothing to do with our concepts of global terrorism at all. And unfortunately, this comes too late. I think the opportunity to make amends is gone.
Well, and It started kind of insanely. I mean, you had a meeting with Donald Rumsfeld that just shows how uninformed this administration was about what to do and how to get it done in there. Tell us that story.
You need to keep in mind that Secretary Rumsfeld, who is certainly not going to come forward publicly and suggest that there was any daylight between him or anyone else in the administration, would tell you that at the outset there was no plan to occupy Iraq because people wisely decided that occupying Iraq was a bad idea. And the original concept or the underlying assumptions of our intervention were that we would rapidly reconstitute the Iraqi army and police, that it would be a serious mistake under any circumstances for Christian Europeans in American or British uniform to march into Muslim Arab towns, villages, and neighborhoods and occupy the country, effectively supplanting Muslim Arab police and soldiers with Christian Europeans in American or British uniform.
I think anybody familiar with the word crusades knew that that was going to be a bad idea.
Absolutely. But within 30 days of our arrival in that country, 30 days during which, by the way, the generals in command on the ground and General Abizaid had not yet taken over, of course, at that point, but General Franks was still in command, essentially stood around waiting to be told by the administration what to do. No one exercised any initiative, and for 30 days you had chaos in Iraq, during which a number of bad decisions were ultimately made, one of which was to effectively throw all of the soldiers and police out of work, essentially treating everyone that had had any relationship whatsoever with the previous regime as a criminal. So hundreds of thousands of people were now without work, without any means of sustaining themselves.
And mad.
And very angry. And effectively what we did is that we fed this so-called insurgency, which rapidly was transformed into a rebellion against American military power. And in our pursuit of Saddam Hussein and his henchmen, of which there were about 250 to 300 key individuals, by the way, that the Iraqi army generals would have been quite happy to round up and dispose of, because there was no love lost between the Iraqi military and Saddam Hussein and his regime, we ended up brutalizing the population even more so. So the problem was that we always knew there would be opposition to our presence in the country, but we fed that opposition, and we created the rebellion against us.
So is it even accurate to refer to them as insurgents?
Well, I would argue no. I've never liked this word of insurgency. What people are talking about is really guerrilla warfare, and it's being waged by people rebelling against the American military presence in their country.
Occupation.
Yeah, and what we've tried to do over the last several months is to move away again from the stupid policy of treating everyone who didn't like the American military presence in the country as the enemy, in the hopes of fragmenting the opposition to us, in the hopes of bringing people into this political process that is still and has been from the outset largely a Shiite Arab-dominated affair. Again, I'm very skeptical of the willingness of the Sunni Muslims under any circumstances to cooperate. And I think people mistake a public willingness to negotiate with capitulation on the part of the Sunni Muslim Arabs. I don't see it occurring.
And let me phrase this question to you, Carl. You have come up with this phrase, withdrawal dilemma. Tell us what that is.
Well, the dilemma is a complex one, but I think the heart of it is this, that almost every plan, whether it is the administration's plan or John Murtha's plan or others who fall somewhere in between, see a key being handing over security to the Iraqi security forces, who at present are not capable. They're not capable of handling the type of insurgency and other problems that we currently face. The problem is this: we are on the offensive against the insurgency. We're focusing most of our resources on that effort. If the plan is to hand over the effort, the mission to the Iraqi security forces, we need to concentrate more on training them, bringing them up to speed, so that they are more capable of maintaining security in the country. But it's very hard to really have that focus when our principal task is fighting these various Iraqi and also foreign fighters in the country. So how do you reduce your commitment to that battle, to hand resources and to focus more on training? If that's the key to getting out, the immediate task is drawing us away from the task that might allow us to leave. That's part of the dilemma. And another part is, in my point of view, is that a fair part of the insurgency, maybe 70 or 80%, is being motivated by our presence there. Many will fall away if we leave. But that won't happen immediately. There'll be a period of gradual de-escalation. And so how do you back off and leave before there has been that de-escalation? I think the solution is that we need to pursue political compromise, that the real solution in the country is not a military solution, it's a political solution. And many people are not really in their withdrawal plans focusing on that issue, the issue of reaching compromise with a fair portion of the insurgency.
Well, do we know who they are enough to sit down at a table and work something like that out? Who are they?
Well, there's a variety of forces inside the insurgency, and certainly some of them, like those that are a minority, who are aligned with Al-Qaeda, are not likely to sit down with us. But nobody estimates that they comprise more than 10% of the insurgency, and some say much less. So those folks won't sit down. But in fact, there have been contacts up and down the Iraqi government, and some contact between the United States and some of these insurgent groups, but we're still unwilling to really understand the requirement of compromise. For instance, the present program of de-Ba'athification, which in various ways punishes or limits the involvement in government of the 1.5 million former members of the Ba'ath Party. Now, many of these people were not very active and not supportive of Saddam Hussein, but they did belong to the Ba'ath Party, which was Saddam's party. And in various ways, their involvement in government is limited by law. It's part of their election law. It's part of their constitution that limits their participation. Many of these people are Sunni. As long as we are targeting 1.5 million people in the country, we are going to have an insurgency that no one can control. So we need to throw those laws out and say that, look, there are 500 or so people that belong in jail. They're going to be tried. They're in jail. They can't play a role. But we've got to narrow the target. 1.5 million, that's too big of a target.
And we have to take a break. I am talking to Carl Canetta, co-director of the Project on Defense Alternatives. He's joining us from Washington, D.C., and Colonel Douglas McGregor. He is a tank commander, was a tank commander in Desert Storm. He's a retired Army colonel and also the author of Breaking the Phalanx.
Yes.
Okay.
Phalanx. And Transformation Under Fire.
Thank you very much. We'll be back. Stay with us. I'm Liz Brown. This is Mondays at 9. Stay with us.
Santa Claus is coming to town.
This is your wake-up call global news update. Dateline New York. The owners of record label Murder Incorporated have been found not guilty of money laundering charges. Irving and Christopher Lorenzo had been accused of laundering money for a notorious New York crack kingpin and were facing 20 years in prison. Prosecutors say the drug lord Kenneth McGriff funneled over $1 million through the record company by cutting checks for tens of thousands of dollars for fake companies that were in McGriff's name. Last week, during testimony, it was revealed that a couple of McGriff's gang members were responsible for the shooting of rap star 50 Cent back in 2001. And Dateline Berlin. Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice is heading for trouble this week. She starts a four-country swing through Europe today and will be taking some rough criticism over secret terrorist interrogation sessions that have been conducted all over Europe by the United States. Numerous countries have charged that the U.S. has abducted suspects off the streets in Europe, whisked them off to secret detention facilities, and even used European airports as layover points for CIA flights that have transported those prisoners. The top justice official for the European Union is already on record as saying that any member state that allowed detention centers on its soil could lose its EU voting rights. Rice will first meet with new German Chancellor Angela Merkel, who has already been put in a tough position because reports indicate that American air bases in Germany have been a part of the CIA shuttle network. Rice will also visit Romania, the Ukraine, and Belgium before heading home. The White House says that Rice will respond in due course to European demands for information on the matter. This is your wake-up call global news update.
I know someone with lupus.
My girlfriend.
My mommy.
We work together.
My sister.
My neighbor.
I know someone with lupus. She's so tired.
Fatigue, achy joints, and fever.
Severe chest pains, heart problems.
Her kidneys gave up.
He had a seizure.
Pain never stops.
Someone you know.
Someone you know.
Someone you know.
Someone you know has lupus.
But there is hope. For information, contact the Lupus Foundation of America at 888-38-LUPUS or lupus.org.
This is Dr. Laura Schlesinger. Join me every Monday through Friday from 2 to 4 on Radio Free St. Louis, AM 920 WGNU, and get a new attitude.
Mommy, sing me to sleep.
Sure, sweetie. Twinkle, twinkle, little star. You're a ball of gas that's very far. 32 light years in the sky. 10 parsecs, which is really high. Helium, carbon, and
hydrogen
fuse to make our starry friend. When it enters supernova stage, it explodes with bursts of rays. And if the star's mass is big and bold, it will become a big black hole.
And if the star's mass is big and bold, it will become a big black hole. Thanks, Mom.
By the sixth grade, many girls lose interest in math and science, so it's up to parents to help create a brighter future for them. For some simple ideas, go to girlsgotech.org.
A public service announcement brought to you by Girl Scouts of USA and Ad Council.
This is Jim Curran, Current Events. We're on every Monday night now from 8 to 10 p.m. On Current Events, we let both sides of an issue be heard. That way we can learn from each other. That's Monday nights, 8 to 10 p.m., Jim Curran, Current Events, right here on WGNU.
Real life, on the cutting edge. It's the award-winning wake-up call with Liz Brown.
I really can't
say. My baby is cold outside.
I've got to go away.
Baby is cold outside.
This evening has been
I'm hoping that you drop
so
in.
Very nice.
I'll hold your hands there just like I.
My mother will start to worry.
Beautiful, what's your hurry?
And father will be pacing the floor.
Listen to that fireplace roar.
So
this is Mondays at 9 with Liz Brown, where we take a closer look at issues and people shaping our world. Once again, here's Liz Brown.
Welcome back. I am talking this morning about Iraq pulling out. And our guest this morning, retired Colonel Douglas McGregor, decorated combat veteran. Also, he is a senior military fellow at the Institute of National Strategic Studies at the National Defense University. He's also been referred to as a maverick. And Carl Canetta, co-director of the Project on Defense Alternatives. And gentlemen, welcome back. Let me get to a caller or two. Dimitri, you have a question or comment for our guest?
Yes, I have one question for each one of your guests, Ms. Brown. Mr. Canetta, when the administration makes the statement that they're going to stay in Iraq until their security is assured, don't you think what they're thinking about is that when they leave, they want to be sure that the forces, the Iraqi forces that are left, that are in control, will protect America's long-term interest in that country? And my other question for Colonel, I'm sorry.
McGregor.
Mm-hmm. McGregor. I was in World War II, and I was informed, and perhaps you're more knowledgeable about military affairs than I'll ever be, but have you ever heard of a war being won by the military in the guerrilla war? And that's my question to you, sir, and I'll hang up and listen.
Let's start with the last question first, please.
Well, yes, a good example of defeating a counterinsurgency that is often cited was the British operation in Malaya in the 1950s. And they, too, struggled as we did until finally they appointed a new senior commander, a man named Sir Gerald Templer, who had extensive combat experience during the Second World War. And he adopted a number of measures that were enormously helpful. The first one is that he announced to the population of Malaya that the British were leaving the country, and subsequently then outlined a series of conditions that had to be met that would facilitate the disengagement of British forces. And once he did that, he robbed the insurgency in that country of considerable strength, because large numbers of people in Malaya said, well, if the British are leaving, there's no point in dying to drive them out. I think one of the serious mistakes we made once we arrived in Iraq was not making it abundantly clear that we would in fact leave.
Mm. In fact, to the contrary, everybody was saying, we may be here forever.
Exactly, which was the wrong message to send in the Arab world. Remember that the Arabs had been forcibly incorporated into other people's empires for years. They were part of the Ottoman Empire, subsequently divided up between the British and the French, and they had no desire to be ruled once again by foreigners. And in fact, their resistance to foreign occupation, quite frankly, is legendary. It's one thing they're very good at subverting and opposing. So we could have stated up front, we are going to leave, and by the way, we will leave as soon as the following conditions are met. You've got a viable force, a military force capable of defending your borders. You've got a police force that's maintaining order. You've got courts, penal system, and so forth. And, oh, by the way, as soon as those things are in place and you have invited the United Nations into your country to supervise elections, we will, in fact, leave. Had we done that, I think you would have seen a very different set of circumstances emerge in that country.
And Carl, can you address Dimitri's question?
Yes. I think that publicly what the administration says our goal is to create an Iraq that is peaceful, united, stable, secure, integrated into the international community and the international economy, and a full partner of the United States in the war on terrorism. That's the public stance, which itself is extraordinarily ambitious. To simply think of that country having a very strong economy and really a leader in the region for a new way of running the economy, well, we should try to accomplish that. We should try to accomplish that in New Orleans before we accomplish it in Iraq. Just to prove to ourselves that it can be done. So the public stance is overly ambitious. But I think the administration also makes no secret of the fact that it is looking to transform that entire region, to transform it from the top to the bottom, politically, economically, even culturally.
And also to take their stuff, too.
Well, there's a great, obviously, where, you know, we are spending all of this money and losing our own lives in the Middle East for a reason. There's a reason that we're not doing it in Africa, but we are doing it in the Middle East. And, yes, the reason is oil. It's strategically important.
And that is not lost on any of the people there.
I don't think anybody has any doubt that at the end of the day, a lot of the reason for us being involved in the Middle East for decades has to do with oil, of course. And so in a sense, that's not it's not publicly stated, but I don't think anybody doubts that fact. But it's also true that we see Iraq as we want an Iraq that is an ally and a base for our operations and our longer term mission in that region, which says to me that we will never leave under the current plan. And in fact, the administration has not made a statement that we intend to leave. And in fact, even if we are asked to stay, our inclination is to go because we see that our presence is something that invites trouble. The best the administration will say is that 2 years from now, they hope that we will have significantly fewer than 100,000 troops there. That's the as far as they will go.
And let me ask this. We only have a couple more minutes here. Colonel, let me ask you this. How problematic are the people that are in charge of this? I mean, the Rumsfelds and the Rices and Bush. I mean, Rumsfeld, kind of nuts, isn't he, for real? When we look at how this war has been waged and the thought that went into it and how it's being executed, it's kind of nutty, isn't it?
Well, I'm not going to become anybody's psychiatrist on this hour. I'm sure
Fair
you have
enough.
More qualified people to talk about
Fair
that than
enough.
I can. So I'll have to leave you with that particular judgment. What I would say is that our military occupation of this country was a serious mistake. It was never necessary. It is counterproductive. The sooner it ends, the better for both the people that live in that part of the world and the better for us. I think, again, the notion that somehow or another we are in a position any longer to dramatically shape the outcome in that country is very, very misleading. The initiative has passed permanently out of our hands. We cannot recover from the serious mistakes made early in this occupation, and the best thing we can do is to get out. Now, what the administration is concerned about, which is understandable, is that they do not wish the American people, nor would they like to have the rest of the world clearly see that we have failed in what we set out to do in this occupation. All of the goals that Carl was outlining are irrelevant. They make no sense. They're not relevant to conditions in the Middle East or North Africa. They're part of this larger philosophy that says that we can export our notions of government, our culture, our way of life to other people's culture, to other people's countries.
That has to be our last word. I'm sorry. I want to thank you both, Colonel Douglas McGregor, Carl Canetta, and Carl, you have a quick website for us?
Yes, the best thing people can do is search on Project for Defense Alternatives or Project on Defense Alternatives, any search engine.
Very good. And Colonel, do you have a website for us?
Sure, you can just type in douglasmcgregor.com and all sorts of things will come up.
All right, thank you, gentlemen. Thank you so much, and happy holidays to both of you.
Same time.
Listen, folks, Liz Brown, Wake Up Call. I'll be back same time, same place tomorrow. Stay strong.
WGNU, Granite City.